From PBS, Jeffrey Bayer and Dan Protest, Chicago Record MC Psalm 1, and another installment of The Worst with Beth Malusky and Steve Delahoy. And now, here's your host, a man who is still scarfing down leftover Easter candy, Justin Kaufman.
So many peeps. Oh, so many peeps. But I'm still eating them till they're gone. Which will be in May. Or probably June, because to be honest, I got a lot. All right, welcome to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. I hope you had a great weekend. Glad you're with us tonight. We've got a great mix of topics. So let's start with politics. The Wisconsin primary is tomorrow, and the front runners, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, are not shoo-ins to win this one. Bernie Sanders is winning in the polls, and Ted Cruz is gaining momentum on the final swing. What's that mean for the delegate count, the conventions, and the race for the presidency? It's Monday, so that means touche with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. My guest tonight at the big table is the First Lady of Chicago hip-hop. Psalm 1 has been on the scene for years, both on major labels and doing it herself. I'll talk with her about making music and misogyny. Rap and hip-hop can be a crappy place for women. We'll talk with Psalm 1 about her experiences in the business. Tomorrow night, a new show on PBS takes a look at the built environment in a new series called The 10 That Changed America. They focus on parks, architecture, and urban planning, focusing on the best this country has to offer, which, of course, includes some examples right here in town. Shout out to Riverside! Jeffrey Bear and Dan Protest will join me later. Live music in studio tonight. That's right. Very excited to welcome back the indie rock band Fort Francis. Love these guys. They got a new album and they got a show at City Winery coming up later in April. We'll talk with the guys and hear some live music tonight. And it's Monday, so it's time for the worst. Hashtag the worst. Simple game. You know what's the worst? Opening day baseball at night. What is this? Both teams playing at night on the West Coast? I thought baseball was for kids. If you have an 8-year-old or 9-year-old at home, you're like, no, the game starts at 9. They're not going to be done with that game till midnight. That's terrible planning. I don't like that at all. You know what's the worst? Warm white wine. That's the worst. You know what's the worst? When you can only find a pencil and you got to write a check or something. First of all, you know what's the worst? Writing a check. Secondly, when you're looking through your drawer and you're like, you can only find a pencil, and you're like, oh, I can't do this, but all right. And then the pencil breaks. And then you find yourself like taking a sharp knife trying to sharpen a pencil. Like you were supposed to learn that in the Boy Scouts that you never went to. You know what's the worst? Sneaky meat. You might like this one, Pete, as a vegetarian type. I went to a nice place yesterday, got the appetizer Brussels sprouts. Sneaky meat. Brussels sprouts with pieces of salami or something in it. The whole reason we get Brussels, no one's going to Brussels sprouts. My vegetarian friend was in from New York, and I'm like, we'll get the Brussels sprouts. That's great. I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, as somebody who doesn't eat meat,
I don't understand that.
You look at the menu and like, oh, yeah, I could have the asparagus. And then you see, you know, it's like with bacon and meat gravy. And
that's the whole point, though. Isn't the whole point of Brussels sprouts and asparagus and those kind of vegetables to be the vegetable option?
That's what my hope for the future is. But I think, and conversely, it's bacon eaters who are like, you know, I got to stop eating 12, you know, things of bacon a day.
They had a marketing meeting. They're like, we're not getting the bacon eaters. Let's make the Brussels sprouts put some bacon in there.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. What's the worst? Anyway, the worst coming up tonight, Beth Malusky from Chicago Cash Cab and Second City, and Steve Delahoy, filmmaker here in town, are going to join us as the panelists. And we got some great tickets to give away, including two VIP tickets to Beer Under Glass, the big craft beer party at the Garfield Park Conservatory coming up in May. We've got two tickets to give away. If you win on the worst, you get them. All that plus news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon, and of course, production provided by my man Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago, starring those who know it well. All right. Let's get the show on the road. We start with the carryout. Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Well, tomorrow, Wisconsin voters go to the polls, which I can imagine is a lot of camouflage overalls, ice fishing, bricks of cheese, and elongated vowels. And a total disdain for people who seat themselves at restaurants. Did I nail it? Oh, not even close? Yeah, I tried. Well, they go to the polls tomorrow to vote for president. And right now, things are tight on both sides thanks to a talk radio boycott. Yep, conservative talk show hosts are banding together to boycott Trump, saying he's taken the civility out of politics. Then the talk show hosts cut themselves off, yelled at each other, and kept calling each other Hussein over and over and over. So there you go. On the other side, Bernie Sanders is leading by 8 points in the latest poll, and word is out that he's outraised Hillary Clinton for the third month in a row. When reached for comment, Bernie Sanders said, "Hello? Hello? Who's this? No, I told you to never call here again. Hello? I can hear you breathing. Doris, it's for you." Hey, good news. The spring session is underway in Springfield. Let's get that budget deal done. No, we're not doing that. Well, okay. But we are going to regulate fantasy football? Good. Illinois. What was the old saying? You put me in a happy state. Illinois, you put me in a happy state. Run. Run away. Run away as fast as you can. You know who doesn't like Illinois? Rich people. A new report says that millionaires are leaving Chicago at a rate higher than other cities around the country. This is tough for the city's economy, but tougher on Jenny's Ice Cream, which was hoping for a big summer in Wicker Park. Mayor Emanuel's Workplace Task Force is recommending Chicago businesses give 5 days of paid sick leave. This would be huge for those people who sit next to people who go to work sick because they don't want to lose their job. I like this Mayor Emanuel. Who is this guy? I haven't heard much about him, but he seems to have good ideas. He's always looking out for the people. I'm going to bookmark his name. Maybe put a Google alert, see what comes up. CBS is threatening to sue the CTU for the one-day strike on Friday, saying that they cost the system millions of dollars. Well, since we're suing, I'd like to sue for my morning-long Minecraft lesson I got from my son, because I can't get that time back. So, Claypool, if you can, put my name on there, too. In weather, totally normal. I mean, come on, so normal. Snow, 70, snow, nothing to see here. Move along. In sports, opening night. The crowd is feeling it. Opening night. That's right. Major League Baseball has taken the fun right out of the first baseball game of the year by having both Chicago teams start at 9 o'clock at night. Opening day turns into opening night, and I guess the only thing that's good is that they didn't have to play in the snow today. I don't know about you. I mean, I like watching the rich people watch opening day at Wrigley Field when it's 30 degrees and snowing. You get all their North Face parkas on, realize they wasted a ton of money. I love it. They're gone by the third inning. The Cubs take on the Angels in an interleague matchup tonight of very little meaning. And the Sox go to Oaktown for a showdown with the A's. The ace, Sonny Gray, got sick today and he won't pitch. And that means his fill-in, his former Chicago Cubs slow curve master, Rich Hill. Yep, he's back in the league. And he's pitching on opening day. What? Who's coming out of the bullpen? Carlos Zambrano? Huh? Is Mike Remlinger on this team? What's up, Todd Hollinsworth? I'm just throwing out names now. Anyway, let's hope for some Tuffy Rhodes, Kosuke Fukudome drama for opening night. Or not, since those two players never did anything else after their opening day heroics. But go Cubs, and go Sox, and go Bulls. Jerry Reinsdorf in the NBA Hall of Fame. How about that? Amazing. Congratulations. Also, terrible marketing by the NBA. Today's baseball's day. Do that announcement tomorrow. Anyway, congrats, Chairman Reinsdorf. You deserve it. So now who's not in the Hall of Fame from that Bulls squad? Luke Longley? No love for Ron Harper? How about Judd Bushler? Any Judd Bushler votes? At least he's in the Men's Volleyball Hall of Fame, right? Just assume he plays men's volleyball. Also, you gotta love Scottie Pippen saying that the Bulls would have swept this year's Warriors and that he keeps Steph Curry to under 20 points. The best part? Who cares? It's impossible to measure. Yesterday, I was watching baseball and ESPN just kept scrolling it on the screen as if it were breaking news. It's Scottie Pippen! He owned a Dodge franchise. He doesn't know. The Bulls did beat the Bucks yesterday without Rose or Taj Gibson, but they're still two back in the race for a playoff spot. The Blackhawks beat the Bruins yesterday. Coach Q wins 800. Kane's hat trick got him 100 points for the season. And can we just start the playoffs already? Really, just this next week? Who cares? And tonight is the NCAA National Championship between North Carolina and Villanova. I say the winner takes on the Connecticut women's team. Then, you know, the Huskies will get a challenge. And finally, tomorrow night is the season finale of The People versus O.J. Simpson on FX. Woo! Well, we finally solved the mystery of what happened to Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman. I can't wait. What? Oh, never mind. Will we find out what happens to John Travolta and his hairpiece? Oh, we do. Great. Okay, good. Well, then, yeah, can't wait to watch. Well, that's the carryout for April 4th, 2016. Hey, we got an opening day special here. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and more hot dogs. We don't have cars. More to come tonight. Chicago rapper, the first lady of hip-hop here in Chicago, Psalm 1, is going to be in studio, talk about her career, both on a major label and independent, and talk about being a woman in rap. All that, plus much, much more tonight on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, a lot more to come here tonight. Touche is going to be a little bit later in the hour. We're going to do it in the 8 o'clock hour. Psalm 1 will go right after the news here. Rob Martyr, how are you? How was the weekend?
I'm doing well. Not bad, my friend. Yours?
That's great. Are you as annoyed as I am about opening day here in Chicago all being at night, after hours, 9 o'clock?
Hey, every team's in it. The March for 162. This is it, man.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is it. Right. It drives me a little bit crazy because I have then I looked at the schedule going, well, it's not Wrigley Field. They're on the road, so I can understand starting at night. That happens. And then you're like, well, when they get back to Chicago, they'll have that 120 start where you go across the street to that McDonald's and get a strawberry shake, you know, maybe check out some improv at I.O., go to Yum Yum Donuts. All that stuff is gone, and that's a night game. The opening day at Wrigley Field is a night game.
Yep.
What? Is anything sacred?
Nothing. Nothing. Well, remember how many years ago now was it? Oh, there'll never be lights on Wrigley Field.
Right.
Never be lights.
Never be lights.
Not going to happen. Well, there go the lights.
And then they were like, never be lights, and I'll always be able to smoke the cigar indoors. And then all that just came crumbling down.
So. Yeah, well.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest tonight has been a fixture on the Chicago hip-hop scene for 15 years. Psalm 1, a.k.a. Hologram Kizzy, is a rap musician from Chicago. She put out her first full-length album in 2006 as the first lady of Rhymesayers, the hip-hop major label out of Minneapolis. But that was 10 years ago. Since that time, she's released about a dozen albums, EPs, and mixtapes independently. And just this winter, she parted ways with Rhymesayers after some public words back and forth after she wasn't included in the big 20-year concert. Always outspoken and extremely talented, Psalm 1 just released a new album with the Rapper Chicks, an alternative rap supergroup of female MCs. It's called the Rapper Chicks Punk Album. Psalm 1 is my guest tonight in studio. She's joined by Angelina, who is they make up half of the Rapper Chicks, and they are here on The Download. Good to see you.
What's up?
Good. Thanks for being here.
No problem.
So let's talk about the new music. This is a little bit of a departure for you because you've recorded as different artists and different styles of music, but this as a group is sort of a departure for you.
I don't like groups. I mean, I personally, at the beginning of my career, I had a wonderful experience with my crew, Nacrobats. We were able to do some cool things together as a group right before I signed to Rhymesayers, and then we broke up, you know, like, you know, a lot of groups do. So, but I vowed then never to be part of a group.
How hard is it, I mean, to be a part of a group? I mean, when you're a hip-hop group, you bring in lyrics, there's so much decision that has to be made around the beats, but it is a very solo kind of venture.
Being a rapper is very selfish. You can have your whole career in isolation, technically, especially now with the internet. You don't ever have to tour. You can make music in your own room and just send it out and still actually be considered a successful artist if you put your eggs in the right basket. For me, if I was going to get involved in the group, period, I did not want to venture into people that I couldn't trust. And that people that I ultimately couldn't be 12 hours on a plane or in a bus with, you know what I mean? I don't want to be looking at the back of your head like, I want to kill you right now, you know? I can't do it. I've seen some of my peers do it, and it just doesn't seem like a cool thing to do. So for me, it was getting to know these ladies and, you know, just they grew on me.
So. Well, Angelina, explain the rapper chicks.
The rapper chicks is a raunchy, sexy, aggressive raw girl group. We're breaking boundaries and we're doing things that, you know, guys could do, but we do it with like a little more sass, a little bit more sexy.
Sassy.
Yeah. I agree with what Sam said. A lot of groups are tough. But being a collective where there's so many tough personalities and good rappers, mm-hmm. it's really hard to, like, center yourself and not feel like I'm the best. I'm better than, you know, I got better raps. I got better bars. I got, you know, so I think it was a big deal getting the four of us together because we were able to uplift each other as opposed to tearing each other down, you know, which is something.
What is it about this group? I mean, what is it about the four? You said, you know, you got to have positivity or you have to trust the people that are involved. What is it about these four or the three people that you're with, Psalm, that bring that out?
Well, for me, I've been a longtime collaborator with Fluffy, and then Alicia was brought to me through another collective, Bonafide. So, like, us getting together was sort of very organic. I known Angelina, then Angel Davenport, through the scene, but personally, I'm a little bit elitist and a little bit mean, so I don't really like rappers. So I was never really like, I was never looking like, oh, that person's so great that I want to work with them. But just the people that I were around were just encouraging it. And then I took a chance and let the Rapper Chicks kind of collective as it was then on stage with me 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I couldn't deny that it was like something really electric going on stage.
For people who aren't familiar with hip-hop shows and maybe have seen one or two, there always is this sort of collective, collaborative experience when you go see a show. Mm-hmm. You know, you go see there's a lot of rappers on stage, you know, you've seen it. And
unfortunately.
Yeah, but talk about that because, it, you know, a lot of people might be scratching their head listening going, well, it seems like, you know, even if it's Psalm 1, you bring five or six other MCs with you and you know, it looks like a group. So what's the difference?
I think a big difference with us was we weren't all rapping. You know, we all have different skills. Mm-hmm. Sam is, she's kind of elite with rap. I just started rapping maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I was a poet, but I'm a quick learner. So as far as rap goes, like, I'm going to hold my own with her. Fluff was a little bit less of a rapper, more of an entertainer. You know, she brought charisma on stage. Same thing with...
She's a dancer.
Yeah, she has talents of her own. And Alicia, too, she's a miraculous singer. So I think it was a big deal that we complimented each other and didn't
also
overshine.
Mm-hmm. Alicia brings the gear. She's a gear wizard. So when you see us, all four of us on stage together, or even when we bring Alicia in, it's just crazy because she has a keytar amongst other things. So, you know, you see, you just smile big.
Yeah. She's a wizard. She's
keytar, like... Yeah, keytar is key. So that's a bad pun. But anyway, it's very good. And I think we all, like Angelina said, we all serve very specific purposes and we don't overshadow each other. We complement each other.
Well, let me ask you something. Let me ask you about your career, because where are you right now? Because, you know, you just publicly had this feud and, mm-hmm. and end of your time with Rhymesayers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the project that comes out of it. I mean, is this what you see moving forward, is working collaboratively with other people? Do you also going to have more solo work coming up soon?
Yeah, I'm working on an album for next year. This year I'm going to put out something special. I don't want to say what it is right now, but I just figured out what it is. And it's going to really, it's going to create a lot of insight as to what my career has been doing. I think this public kind of feud with Rhymesayers shed a little light on, like, why I've been so independent. Mm-hmm. Why I haven't really been so quick to jump into bed with another label, just because Rhymesayers was my favorite label on earth. And this is the way.
This is a very this popular. What, yeah, this is the big, yeah. This is Atmosphere.
Yeah,
other
this
rappers
is some who, of my favorite yeah. rappers
Atmosphere,
ever.
ASAP, Idea.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a conscious rap kind of powerhouse out of Minneapolis, and you've hinted, I you know, going back and looking at
you, look
hinted,
at the
yeah, there's a couple interviews in 2010, 2011. There, you could tell that you're not happy, and that you weren't getting what you thought you were going
to
get.
I was trying to keep it classy in the streets, and not say, well, you know, I'm upset and here's why. I never wanted to seem like the bitter rapper who, you know, sometimes you see an artist blame the label for something and you're just like, nah, you just need to be better or work harder. And maybe that is true in some respects, but I don't think so. I think that it was truly, I just got treated differently because I was just the lone female there, a black chick. I'm not from Minneapolis, mm-hmm. you know. I just think there was just a lot of things working against me over there. And as far as the whole label thing, it was just like, well, this is my favorite label on earth and I feel unhappy here, so I know these other labels are probably going to be, you know what I mean, kind of more the same. And for me, I want to cultivate something myself and have the freedom to work independently or with anybody I want to, not have to worry about where the next artist coming from or if somebody's going to want to put it out because my fans want it.
I'm fascinated because, I mean, even if your work after you put out the record in 2006, you were at the forefront of the movement of releasing the music online for free. I mean, you were doing that while you were at Rhymesayers, just saying, I'm working on a record.
iTunes was huge then. Right. I just started really touring heavily when the internet became user-friendly. You know what I mean? Because, like, before, like, 2005, people were getting on the internet and everything, but it wasn't as user-friendly nearly as it started to become in 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. Especially, don't want to, like, plug other products, but, you know, Steve Jobs and them really did a really good job with how to get on the internet through their products, and I was seeing that in real time as I was on tour. I was going on tour when we had to use a map, you know what I mean, or print out MapQuest, right. You know, now it's just all GPS or whatever. So, like, I've really survived this kind of internet invasion.
It's interesting now because there is a collective in Chicago. The rappers that have come out from Chance the Rapper down are mm-hmm. all, I mean, that's their MO is to deliver that music for free. And it seems like it's you were ahead of that curve by
a little bit,
by almost 10 years.
A little bit. I remember somebody just telling me on your MySpace, MySpace was huge when I started coming up. So it was really like, put free music on MySpace. You know what I mean? Just put new songs all the time for your fans on MySpace and see what happens. I was really on the cusp of making sure that you have that content. And then when I started really getting unhappy with Rhymesayers, I had a friend of mine just say, you know what? Put out some music. Just put out some music. Mm-hmm. Because while you're sitting here bellyaching about your situation, fans really want this music, and whatever it is, don't worry about it. Don't worry about not putting, because, you know, when you have a huge platform and then you walk away from that platform but do something without that platform, it's common for an artist to get scared and say, nobody's going to have access to it, because you're going to go from, you know, going from a million people possibly hearing your stuff to 10,000. That's not good, you know, in terms of numbers. But the big companies don't tell you that. But if you have 10,000 engaged fans, you know, you can make a career.
Chicago rapper Psalm One and Angelina in studio, half of the supergroup, the Rapper Chicks. More with Psalm and Angelina when we return here on The Download. Stay with us.
We don't need no fuel like, ooh, she vegan. Baby, where's the protein? Said I'm from Shy City. We got 4 proteins.
So, Rapper Chicks there for you. The song Karma off the album. That's who we're talking to. Half of the Rapper Chicks tonight. Psalm One and Angelina. Psalm One, of course, the first lady of Chicago hip hop. Been involved with so many different projects here in town and has been on the scene for 15 years. Now, when we were talking about you leaving the mainstream or a record label, because, you know, you talked about being on Rhymesayers and going independent, and that's easy to do, but there definitely has to be some fear involved.
I knew my music was good. I didn't know how it was going to resonate without the machine behind me. I was just scared of just doing something without them. You know, just kind of like a parental sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like, they never said, I mean, my deal was good to the point where I could put out side projects and stuff. I was just very much looking forward to working with them again. Mm-hmm. So I was focused on an album. I wasn't focused on putting out free music. In fact, Rhymesayers was very much against me putting out free music. A lot of the artists on the label were very discouraging of me putting out music and actually, like, made fun of it, you know? Some of that actually hurt my feelings a little bit. But,
really?
Like, thinking back, it's just kind of like, I was actually ahead of you guys on that, and now that's kind of y'all's platform too. You guys use free music as a way to create, you know,
anticipation. It was a precursor to the music industry as we know it now. I mean, I wonder if, you know, if you had to do it all over again, and you're reinventing yourself as you go. But if you look back to that time, 2006, 2007, if the industry was what it is now, there would be no fear. That's music is.
Yeah, I mean, I kick myself for being such a coward, but I feel that I'm stronger than I ever was. And, you know, hindsight is 2020, and I do see a lot of brave artists out here making dumb decisions. So I guess maybe it's kind of like evening out for me. It's just, for me, it's almost always been about baby steps and not biting off too much that I could chew as an individual, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that, I'm really happy. I probably, even knowing what I know now and being in the position I was in, I probably would have signed with Rhymesayers again. I would have done some things differently, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, that was an incredible, incredible platform, and I highly respect most of the people over there.
well said. Psalm 1 and Angelina, half of the group, the Rapper Chicks. So let's talk about this, because for you, I mean, you're from Chicago. I mean, obviously the pedigree. I mean, think about the class that you came out of. I mean, people, I was reading up that, you know, people consider your peers Lupe Fiasco, mm-hmm. Rhymefest, that sort of conscious movement that happened in the mid-2000s, you know, mm-hmm. even on the heels of what Common and Kanye West were doing before what they are doing now. Talk about that, because you've seen a lot happen in the Chicago hip-hop scene in the last 10 years. The new sort of wave of conscious rap with Chance the Rapper. Where do you see yourself fitting in?
Like, what's
or maybe
that?
Not.
What
maybe you're
that?
Not fitting in. Maybe that's
the whole
point. I don't
know what that means. Yeah, I can do plenty of styles, and I think that is really indicative of what a true Chicago artist is. So I can do all those styles, and I can also just reinvent myself. I just like saying words in fun ways, and I like finding myself through the music. So I'm kind of just living through the art. I don't follow trends. Mm-hmm. I like to show skill and show, hey, I can do this style. I can hop on a song with an Angelina or a Chance or a Saba or any of these younger rappers and not hold my own, but just show, like, look, this is where we are right now, and these are some of the better rappers. I don't get on tracks with people I don't respect, so it's just kind of like there's so many different styles here, so much talent. Like, I'm so happy that we have the spotlight, because it's always been that way. When I was a kid, before any of us were recording music, we always knew people had so much talent here, and that, you know, it was never, you know, the people who were blowing up here, it was just like a very, very, very small percentage of the talent. Mm-hmm. I still feel that way.
I was going to ask you that. Angelina, let me ask you that. I mean, you see so many different artists from Chicago start getting national attention. It's almost like, once again, the spotlight is on Chicago when it comes to, like you mentioned, Saba or Chance the Rapper or Vic Mensa down the line, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that there's a space for rapper chicks in there? I mean, is that where you guys see yourselves at, or is it more you're charting your own course?
I do feel like when I say unique, like, I think we don't fit in here. I think, not to say like we're bigger than Chicago, but I feel like it's bigger in the grand scheme of things. I think Rapper Chicks is a platform for all women, not just mm-hmm. like Chicago women, not just girls who rap, but girls who sing, girls who dance, girls, whatever kind of art you want to do, that's kind of where the Rapper Chicks fall. I think it's kind of raw that Sam can do so many different styles. She's very much what Chicago's about. You know, before drill music was, it was like, what was it, Atlanta, like, trap? It was like the trap.
Wait, Atlanta bounce.
Yeah, there we go. But that's what our drill sounds like. So, you know, the fact that she can do so many different styles is very Chicago in itself.
Angelina and rapper Psalm 1, one half of the supergroup, the Rapper Chicks. We'll continue the conversation, because I want to talk about being women in rap. Misogyny, that's a big part of the hip-hop scene, not just here in Chicago, overall. So we'll talk with Psalm 1 and Angelina some more after the news here on WGN Radio.
Tell me something I don't need to know. Why don't you look into my eyes and let your secrets go?
Little Psalm 1 right there, the song Secrets. It's off the record Psalm 1 Loves You, featuring the Rapper Chicks. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Psalm 1 and Angelina. Half of the supergroup, the Rapper Chicks, both rappers here in Chicago. Psalm 1, sort of known as the first lady of rap. I have to ask, being women in rap, in the Chicago hip-hop world, it's got to be hard.
Yeah, it's horrible everywhere. But I feel like, specifically in Chicago, we have the best female rappers on earth, per capita. Maybe I'm biased. But I've seen the caliber of female MCs that come out of here. One of the best rappers in Chicago is sitting to my left, female or not, you know. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion, and a lot of people share it.
But you got to deal with a lot of crap, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, talk about men, is it getting better?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. In certain respects, it's getting worse. I feel like when you're a woman who demands respect, you're gonna get it where you are, and if someone's not giving it to you, you don't mess with them. So you're not going to see me really fraternize or be around people who are like secretly like, you know, not getting it as far as the need for women's voices or understanding that there's always been a lack of women's voices. And because, you know, a female artist that you want to work with, and I'm talking to you dudes out here, like, she might be attractive. Can you keep it in your pants long enough to get some work done? You know what I mean? Can you make sure that you're keeping the focus on the music or the production or whatever it is, that you're not, you know, belittling her or undervaluing her talent, mm-hmm. that you're not patronizing her when she gets to the venue and, you know, the sound guy's like, oh, you got some gear. And it's like,
And the rapper chicks, more gear than you ever. But like, do you find yourself having to be almost, you know, the mother of, mm-hmm. you know, of women rappers in Chicago, but you've gone through 15 years of this bullshit,
yeah.
right? So do you find yourself when you're sitting with Angelina as a younger rapper
sometimes.
Saying, you got to watch out for this, you got to do this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm at her all day, but I'm talking about, like, even outside of my immediate circle of people. Yeah, sometimes I find myself in the room and I'm like, yeah, I have the most experience here. And that's fine. Like, I like that. As long as that's not happening all the time, I like to get inspired, too. Not to say that younger rappers lack inspiration or anything, but sometimes it's good to always keep someone with more experience around you. So I appreciate the fact that I've been able to be even steady for 15 years. I know people that were hot last year, they can't put out a free album. No one cares, you know what I'm saying? So for me, I feel definitely very blessed to have seen, you know, the things that I've seen. As far as women artists, we have to fight for a few, I think, more in certain respects than our male counterparts, but that's not any excuse as to why you can't be successful.
Let me ask this as we wrap up. Let me ask both of you. You mentioned Chicago's got the best female MCs in the world.
Yes.
What is it about Chicago that makes the greatest?
I think it's the struggle. I think it's all the BS that we have to deal with. If we're going to be top tier, then I know we got to go through the struggles to get there. Like, when I wake up in the morning, I don't think to myself, like, crap, this was built on, you know, some foul-ass dude. You know, sorry. But I think to myself,
this country was built on some foul-ass dude.
I think to myself, like, man, like, these are the challenges I went through. Like, in 10 years, I'm not going to be sitting here. In 10 years, I'm going to be chilling on the beach, probably kicking it with Kanye. Or kicking it with Kanye.
You heard it here first.
You know, that's what I'm going to be doing in 10 years. And mm-hmm. these trials that I'm going through now are what's going to make me make it, mm-hmm. you know?
What do you think about Chicago?
I think it's the water. And I honestly think it's geographically, it's the same thing that, you know, just artists, period, from here have dealt with. No major labels. Now we have a decent industry here, which means more people doing it.
Does that make
it.
You hustle more, that there's labels here?
I just feel like I know how to move. I've lived elsewhere and come back. You know what I mean? So I know where the labels are. They're going to be there. You know what I mean? Like, I also know how to put my own album on iTunes and get the money myself. You know what I'm saying? So as far as I think what we struggle with here in Chicago is identity and fear, to be honest. I think that a lot of rappers don't have, you know, the A&R, the culture, the experience to understand what really is happening in the big leagues, because we do have our own little bubble of, like, incredible talent where people have been able to transcend and go and do, like, great things like a Chance or like mm-hmm. a Saba or like a Tink, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they actually had to leave and they actually had to, you know, be in these meetings and have the right team. I think there's a lot of talent here with not a lot of direction, and I think that's probably the issue. And when it comes down to female artists, maybe following females who don't really know what's best for themselves, much less any other female or men who might be predatory or men who just don't know what they're doing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just think it's a human connection that you have to make and understanding why you're making the music. I think that's part of the reason I've been successful is because, you know, I come from an industry that I don't have the desperation to make music. I'm going to make music whether or not I'm popular at it or not. You know what I mean? Like, I was a chemist. I was making a lot more money than I was making now.
You know what I'm saying? I saw that, like, on your bio. It's like, oh.
Yeah, so I didn't.
Rapper/chemist.
Yeah. I didn't get into this to become rich or famous. I did it because I was making music anyway, and people who I really respect came and sought after me. So that's a blessing, you know what I mean? So for me to even be sitting here right now, you know, 15 years later, that sounds crazy. That sounds
15
crazy.
Because
I was like, carry the two. I've been doing it professionally for 10 years. And then five years before that, I was doing it as a bum. No, I'm kidding.
up and comer.
Up and comer. Yes.
Right.
So yeah, 15. Yeah, that's true.
Well, congratulations on 15 years.
I think we need to go get a cake.
Yeah, right. And for 15 more, and 15 after that.
That's right.
After that.
That's right. And be like Elton John.
Yeah, that's right.
You
could be on that beach with Kanye in 10 years.
Waddling around.
Psalm 1, Angelina, they are half of the group, the Rapper Chicks. The new album is out. It's called the Punk Album.
You can download the SoundCloud app, follow Psalm 1, that's PSALMONE, and that is the first playlist on the SoundCloud app. You can stream that for free, but if you want to buy it, and now that you know that we're not working with a big conglomerate, the money goes back into putting out more music for you guys. You can buy it at regularblackgirl.com, all one word, all spelled correctly, regularblackgirl.com.
Psalm 1, Angelina, thanks for being here.
Rapper Chicks.
Thanks for having us.
What a night. What a night here in Chicago. It is April 4th. It's opening day. I guess opening night. Still driving me crazy. The idea that they took opening day baseball for both squads here on the north and south side and put them in West Coast time, which I understand. I get it. I get it for the concept that it's warm on the West Coast. But you can play 3 o'clock games there.
Yeah. Good day game.
A good day game.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, obviously there's money involved, all that kind of stuff, but the Cubs are playing the Angels for no apparent reason. An interleague game with, like, I kind of get the idea of an interleague game to start this season with the Royals and the Mets.
Yeah.
That's a World Series. Or even, like, you know, they did it in basketball all the time. A West and an East team will go at each other, but there's some tension to it. The Angels and the Cubs, I guess it's all market. L.A., Chicago, they know that the L.A. market will come out to watch the Chicago Cubs play. But it's annoying because you're like, I mean, I don't know what they have the Dodgers playing right now. The Dodgers are in San Diego in the eighth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And there it's a day game out there. They're playing the day game. So this was all set up by ESPN. And what drives me crazy is they just stole the concept. And I now am representing the L.A. kids. But the Chicago kids too.
It's true.
I mean, baseball was a game. It was always a game for 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds to put their game hat on and watch the first game of the season and get excited that Fergie Jenkins was on the mound. You know, dating myself a little bit, like a 1980, a return of Fergie Jenkins.
Yeah,
I'm not a 1969 Cubs guy. I'm more of a 1981 when he came back. But that kind of thing, and I just feel like this way for both the Cubs and the White Sox is, I don't like it.
No, it's terrible. Opening day should always be opening day.
Yeah.
You have a separate day. You can have opening night later. Like the Cubs next week, their first home game, as you mentioned, is a night game.
Yeah,
terrible.
And that's another thing, too.
Plus, it's in April. It's going to be freezing at night.
Well, I have my rule, which is a rule I learned here in Chicago, and I think a lot of people probably agree, is that there's no baseball till March. I don't go to a game until Memorial Day. After Memorial Day is when I start. April, man, that's crazy. That's third inning, I'm out.
It's terrible. As someone who's gone to games in April. I've gone to games in June where I've been freezing as well, saying this is miserable. The thing about what I like about the games on the West Coast, which I never really noticed before until today, was that I always used to hate opening day. The Cubs would play. And then you're all excited about the baseball season. You waited all winter for it. It comes opening day, boom. Then they have an off day the next day. I always used to hate that.
Yeah, I hate that too. It's almost like you're not. Didn't you just do spring training for 2 months?
But you know, I know it's built in for weather. But so apparently they don't have that in Los Angeles because you know tomorrow the Cubs are playing again, another night game.
Well, maybe that's true. Anaheim. It's 72. I think the temperature for tonight is 70 degrees. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I get the concept of playing on the West Coast in April. They should do, you know, it's not unlike when the circus comes to town for the Hawks and the Bulls. You go on a West Coast swing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's not fair to baseball. Maybe baseball's different. But, I mean, I would start April on a West Coast swing. I would say they play the Padres, the Angels, and the Dodgers, and
sure.
All the rest of the teams that are involved there. And then come May, they come to Chicago. Maybe June.
For a little spell.
They got to hit the South. They get to Sega Hill, Texas teams, a little Arizona, then a dome tour. Then they get to Chicago.
We were part of a season ticket group.
Yes.
There's 10 of us. So we each get 10 games. We each get eight. There's eight of us. We each get 10 games. And that's always when we do the draft, we kind of conduct the draft much like a fantasy draft, first person, second person, you know, and then you go down the line and, you know, yeah, all the June, July, August, September games get taken up first, and it's always like a tussle to see who gets those April games.
It's like the last draft pick. I'll take April 23rd.
Yeah.
April 23rd against the Reds.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was our first game that we picked was April next week, Thursday against the Reds, a night game.
Ooh. What's a night game at least?
I'm not going to like, shuffle that one off to the old father.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, I would love to give this to you. Oh, thank you. But I mean, now, I'm assuming there's just going to be a huge, it's unreal to me the amount of pressure and expectation there is for not only the Cubs to go to the World Series, but for it to be an event every game.
Mm-hmm.
They have to come back in the eighth and ninth inning every game. Like, it needs to be a huge. And, oh my God, Schwarber just broke a window over on Wilmot. Oh my God, look at this. You know, like that kind of thing where there's not going to be a regular, well, they won 3-1. Or, hey, they lost 5-2. Who cares? Like, that's out the window.
And tonight, if Jake Arrieta only pitches 5 innings,
right.
Oh boy, look out. Season's a wash.
We should have. And see, and the other thing about playing these late West Coast games is we don't get to do any post game off it. You know, last year we had a great segment. I think we should bring it back. You know, we should. It's a lot of work, but the Cubs Fan Jam is one of my favorite things going, where instead of having the analyst come on and just tell us, you know, who got the winning run and who pitched what and how strong it was, you have a fan come on, just a regular person who's not media trained. And what did we miss by not watching the game tonight?
Uh-huh.
Their job, they were assigned by the download to watch 9 innings. So most of the questions are about what the broadcast, what happened in the broadcast when they cut away and someone's, oh, eat the hot dog, drop the hot dog. Like that kind of stuff. That's what I want to see because I don't really care. Like at the end of the day, I can get all the stats
and
right now. Like I have 17 screens right now. It's all baseball. But it's like I can get all that stuff. But I want more of, you know, I want more of the color.
Yeah.
So that could be fun. Like, we do it every night. It's just, it's a hard thing to wrangle. Like, I felt like last year we did it in August and September when it was crunch time. When it made sense, here comes the Cubs. And it was tough. Like, hey, man, do you think you could do the Cubs? Do you think you could watch 9 innings tonight? They're like, oh, man, I don't know. Man, can I just watch it tell you who won? I'm like, no, I don't need that. So
I think, yeah, that's a little, that might be a little tough. And I don't want to, I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, but I don't want to discount the South Side, because I think the Sox are going to have a pretty good team as well. I don't want to alienate.
And I'm a Sox fan.
Yeah,
and I know
the city.
The techs get mad at me, but I do like the Sox. I'm a Sox fan over Cubs. But as a Sox fan, we've been through this before. There have been many a times in the last 10 years where they've been like, this team is really good on paper. I would watch the sleeper White Sox. You know, I think they have what it takes to beat the measly Twins. And then the Twins are, you know, we talked to Rick Hahn about it on the show. They have to start fast. I know it's so cliche to say that, but the White Sox in the last couple of years have ended the seasons with record pace. You know, where they're like, how many times have we heard from the White Sox? From the All-Star break, they were the number one team in baseball. Well, they still only won 77 games because they only won 20 before the break. So they have to start fast if they want to get involved. And it's also a business. if I were the White Sox, I would do everything I possibly could, because if they start slow, no one goes to the park.
Yeah.
You know, I went to a couple games in the summertime last year, and it was pretty empty, because by the time, even if they won four in a row or whatever, they're not generating that excitement.
Mm-mm.
That's what they're going to have to figure out. I'm excited. I'm like I said, I'm bummed that they're both starting at 9 o'clock tonight, West Coast, A's and Angels, but I'm excited to have them both back in business. It's so fun. I'm excited in the large, like the macro, like I love baseball, but the micro, like watching a 9-inning game is tedious. It's totally, I mean, I know you disagree with me, but I'm like,
yeah.
I just am like, oh God, all right. Like the game I watched the opening day yesterday, I watched Toronto and Tampa in the college stadium where Tampa plays. The Tropicana Field is terrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Why am I in the third inning when they're like, here's Chris Caballero. And third inning, that is a ball. Let's time out. Let's take a replay so we can take a look if that was a ball. Was that a strike? That's what it is for like 3 hours. And then on the scroll underneath, they now scroll. Scottie Pippen said he would beat the Warriors in a game of basketball. You're like, oh, what is this? This is not even real. All right. All right. Still to come tonight, we're going to talk with the guys from Touche. Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling will be here. Also, Jeffrey Bear and Dan Protest will be here to talk about their new show, The 10 That Changed America, talking about the built environment, architecture, parks, homes, all the things in America that changed the way we live. So that's coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, starting tomorrow night, a new three-part national series will debut on WTTW and all over the country. It's called 10 That Changed America. It focuses on homes, parks, and towns that changed the way we live. And since it's produced by WTTW, of course, Chicago's represented, from parks to high-rises on the Chicago River to towns on the Des Plaines River. And, of course, it's hosted and produced by two of the best, Jeffrey Bear and longtime WTTW producer Dan Protas. Both of you guys, thanks for being here in studio.
Great, hey, thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
All right, so this is great. I mean, this is something that is actually an outgrowth of not what you guys did a couple years ago with the 10 buildings that changed America. Talk about how this came about.
Yeah, so we did the show 10 Buildings That Changed America, which was essentially packing 300 years of architectural history into 1 hour, which sounds pretty ridiculous, but actually went over really well, and audiences loved it, and PBS wanted more. So this time we're kind of looking more broadly at the built environment, not just buildings, but homes, parks, and at urban planning.
This is obviously, everyone knows in Chicago, Jeffrey, your work, because the lakefront tours, the river tour, all that stuff you've done for WTTW. This is for a national audience. Do you bring that same sensibility to the to the stuff you do for the national audience?
Yes, I think so. We've tried to sort of take what we do here in Chicago and just make it for a broader audience. I think. I would say with Dan's sensibility as a producer, this show is maybe a little more pizzazz. Could we say that?
Fun.
Dan?
It's more fun.
Jeffrey's known for no fun.
No fun as possible.
It's got a certain Midwestern sensibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the differences is that my shows that I've been doing for more than 20 years on Channel 11 are essentially tours. It's me giving you a tour of something.
Right.
And by and large, most of the shows, I'm the only one who talks. You know, I'm talking to you for an hour and a half. These shows, I'm much more the person who's conducting the interview, walking along with a local expert.
Is that hard for you and your ego? I mean, is that difficult for you?
I mean, Jeffrey's an awesome interviewer. He's good at connecting with people.
No, actually, I really love it because it actually is different than what I do in Chicago. And I realize when we show up to do an interview, you know, Dan and the director of photography, they're, you know, getting everything all set up with the lighting and the microphones and picking just the right angle and all of that. And my job is to make the person I'm going to interview comfortable.
Yeah, right.
And so I sit there and try to bond with that person until the camera rolls so that we can get a lighthearted sensibility, something not very academic.
Do you have something you say right before you go to air? Like, hey, stay... Hey, keep smile.
Keep it classy.
Keep it classy. What do you say right before you go to air?
You know what? Actually, the only one that I can actually think of was there was this really wonderful woman we interviewed in Central Park. She's their official photographer and historian. Her name is Sarah Cedar Miller. And she was cracking me up through the whole pre-interview, like just talking to me. And I've had this experience where the minute the camera rolls, they become very formal.
Right,
and,
right.
And I just leaned over and I said, "You're funny. Be funny."
And it's she okay.
Was. She was.
Yeah. Architectural historians are not known for their sense of humor.
Well, let me ask you, Dan, because you know, this is different in Chicago. You know, you guys have, I mean, Jeffrey, you've become the trademark sort of historian for Chicago. But finding 10 places around the country, is that a lot tougher for you?
Yeah, so that was kind of step one when I first started working on the project, was to actually put together a panel of experts from all over the country. These were like historians and practicing architects. And I asked them, you know, if you were doing this show, what would you feature? Otherwise, it's just me sitting there in my office coming up with...
Googling.
Googling Wikipedia, my favorite source of information. So I'm asking them what should be in the show. And, of course, they all have totally different ideas about what should be in. So I'm left with a list of probably like 30 places for each show.
Right.
And then I just start calling through the list, thinking like a TV producer, you know, what's going to make the best TV show. And, of course, geographical diversity is king. You know, I easily could have done 4 parks in New York.
Right.
But, then, you know, people sitting at home in Tennessee on a Tuesday night flipping through the channels don't want to watch this New York show.
Right.
You know, they want a show with national breadth. And also looking for good stories, because it's TV and people want good stories.
Well, give us an example. You don't have to give us all 10 because we don't want to give away the whole show. But,
yeah.
But give us a couple that aren't Chicago that stick out.
So Overton Park in Memphis is an amazing story of this park that it is essentially Central Park for Memphis. And they were looking to run a freeway through it in the 1950s. And the entire community rallied around this effort to stop the freeway and sued. And it actually went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was stopped. And it resulted in this U.S. Supreme Court decision that's preserved parks all over the country.
And there's the thing that makes a story great is the characters. And it was this grassroots movement with these women, these essentially housewives, who were derided in the press as the little old ladies in tennis shoes trying to stop our gleaming freeway from coming through the park. And, you know, we interviewed the daughter of one of these little old ladies in tennis shoes. She remembers her mother typing Supreme Court briefs on a manual typewriter on their dining room table. And as Dan wrote in the script, then she took the bus to Washington, D.C. to sit in the Supreme Court and watch this thing be. So it's a, you know, it's a great story.
That's a great point that there are great stories.
Yeah.
And then there's great TV, meaning there's always going to be the characters that have to tell the story. I mean, as a producer, as you guys put the stuff together, are there times you're like, oh, that's a great story about Flagstaff, Arizona. And then you do it and you're like, it wasn't told well, like or you don't have the footage you thought you were going to get.
Keep in mind, there are 30 stories in this series, 30, 10 in each episode. And I go into them, you know, having done my research, but somewhat blind as to, you know, whether or not it's going to be a good interviewee or an amazing story. And some of them don't turn out to be amazing stories. And so then it's my job as a producer to, you know, hire a drone operator to fly over the park to make it look.
I thought you were going to say voiceover and just put some peanut butter in their mouth. And, you know, that's a TV trick, right?
Sure. Just dub new voices.
Right.
Then it's our job as producers just to make it as compelling as possible.
And I have to say, too, my job is to really draw out the person who I'm interviewing, which almost always is not difficult. But every once in a while when an interview is over, I'll just feel like, I failed. You know,
I think we have the same one in mind.
Couldn't get that person to lighten up.
Let's talk about the Chicago stuff, because the show is going to have Chicago in each part of the three that are airing on Tuesday nights on WTTW. But you talk about the parks here. There's an episode about the parks, but there's also an episode about Marina City here in Chicago and Riverside. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the Chicago park that we picked is actually a system of parks that not a lot of people know. There are 15 neighborhood parks on the south side that were built in 1904, 1905. And the idea behind these parks, there had previously been this idea that, you know, if you gave the poor a place to kind of breathe fresh air and to think great thoughts, that they'd be uplifted magically and somehow would become wealthy. But they realized in Chicago that just wasn't doing the trick. And so instead, they started offering them actual social services at these parks. So you can still go to these parks on the south side. You can't get the social services anymore. But they'd give you a bar of soap and a shower for people whose tenements didn't have running water so they could take a shower once a week.
Safe milk, a meal.
Safe milk, vaccinations, English classes for new immigrants, vocational training for the poor who were looking to start a new career. And this idea took off, spread all over the country. This idea, not just that you offer social services, but that you build a system of parks in the neighborhoods where people actually need them, which is something Chicago's kind of known for.
Can we name a couple of them in Chicago, the ones that people might know?
McKinley Park was the first of them.
You guys, Jeffrey, did you know this before? Did you know this before you sort of looked into these parks?
Because that particular story we've probably been telling for 10 years.
That's what I was gonna say.
This is our opportunity to share it with the national audience.
That was my thought. Like, do you guys know these stories? And you're like, I know how to tell this story. This is a great story. It should be given to a national audience.
Yeah.
Are there still things you're learning about in the Chicago area that you're like, that blew my mind?
I learn about things every week. You know, we have another thing that I do on WTTW, which is called Ask Jeffrey, where people write in with their questions about Chicago architecture and history. And a week doesn't go by where I don't get a question and I just think, I never heard that. And I'll just do the first little Google search and I'll just think, how about that? That is true. And so we'll really do some, more in-depth research and answer the question. Yeah.
Or there are stories like Marina City, which obviously we know Marina City very well, but we didn't necessarily know the full story behind it, which we include in the Holmes episode.
One detail about Marina City, these are those corn cob-shaped towers on the Chicago River that I thought was so interesting. You know, remember the north side of Chicago, what we now call River North, even Old Town, these were seedy areas in the 1960s. So Bertrand Goldberg, the architect of Marina City, you know, one of the buildings in that complex is that big sort of swoopy looking office building, now a hotel. And he positioned it on the north side of the site as a big slab, like a wall, to separate the complex from the seedy north side that you wouldn't want to have.
The idea of Marina City was that people were moving to the suburbs, and Goldberg and the janitors union, who actually hired him to build the project, were looking to lure people back into the city. And the way you do that is with flashy architecture, and also just keeping in mind that downtown was dead and there was no place to shop. You create an entire city within a city, with a grocery store and a bowling alley and an ice skating rink, and you give everyone everything that they might need to live an urban life.
I had a friend who lived up there, and I would go, and I'd never been in that building. It's a couple of years ago, and I was struck by how in all inclusive it was. Even it's old, and there's the all the stuff on the floor is old, but I was just like, wow, I had no idea the stuff was in here.
And the views are amazing, and that's part of the idea is you're trying to sell someone who's got a backyard in the suburbs on the idea of urban living. And fine, you don't get a backyard, but instead you get this porch with an amazing view.
And I would add to that just one more. I've been doing the river tour for the Chicago Architecture Foundation since before I worked at Channel 11, since 1988. I talk about this thing all the time. But, it never really sort of dawned on me. It's almost, we call it a city within a city, but it's almost like a suburb within a city, you know, because it doesn't even line up with the street grid, with the level of the street. You have to sort of walk up a level to get to the place. So completely separated from the city, like literally isolated, and you can park your car and you have a movie theater. Well, this was the age when people were fleeing to the suburbs.
Yeah.
It's walled off from the north side. It's like the suburb within a city.
Well, speaking of suburbs, Riverside's the other component in this national program, which I didn't know has connections to New York, to Central Park.
Yeah, Riverside is one of America's first planned suburbs, and it's designed by Olmsted and Vox, the guys who designed Central Park. And the idea there is that Chicago has become a dirty, nasty place, as have many American cities by the end of the 19th century. And they're trying to give the city dwellers a refuge, but one that looks very different from the city. So the city's on a rigid grid. Riverside has meandering curvilinear streets, so that it's almost like you're exploring it. There's kind of a surprise waiting around every corner. And it's also extremely green. He submerges the streets below grade level so that there's kind of these unbroken vistas of green. And then he sets back the houses, which is something completely new and different, giving everyone a front lawn. He's the guy we have to thank every time we mow our front lawns.
You two got the best job in the
world. I kind of feel that
way. You really do. These are the greatest things, and I'm glad that it's coming to a national audience, because, you know, TTW and what Channel 11 has done for just documenting Chicago, and you guys doing so much with the station to give us a sort of a vantage point of what Chicago was like and what it might be like, it's tremendous. And I wish you success in everything you guys do. 10 That Changed America. It's going to be on Tuesdays, the next three Tuesdays. It's here on WTTW, but it's going to air all over the country. Dan Protest and Jeffrey Bear, can't thank you enough for coming in. Good luck.
Thank you.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
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 You gotta love those guys.
Not unlike opening day, we've decided to do a late edition of the Touche. Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy in studio. We do this every Monday on the program. Take a look at the national political scene, also the local political scene. Dave Lundy, Democrat analyst. Chris Roebling, Republican analyst. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you, Justin.
It's good to be here.
You look like an hour later than usual.
Sorry.
A little more facial
hair. Can I just plug the Union League Club boys and
girls
clubs?
You're going to show up an hour late and plug?
I got to plug.
Oh, my God.
We just raised a lot of money for the Union League Club boys and girls clubs with Eddie Olczyk, Ron Rappaport,
right.
And Dana Buffone accepting an award on behalf of the departed too soon, Doug Buffone.
Yeah.
So it's the Ringlardner Awards Dinner, and let's just say there was a lot of good feeling over there.
There you go. Well,
thank you very much for
no problem
pushing us.
This
back.
Is a treat for the.
Don't thank him. He's here all
generation.
Night. You got to thank me, buddy.
Thank you, Lundy. What a reasonable guy you are, except when discussing politics.
All right, let's start. Let's get right to it. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Wisconsin tomorrow. The showdown. The polls say Bernie Sanders got the win on this one.
Well, the polls are a little close. There was a CBS poll today that came out, showed Bernie up by 2. There's another one up with him up by 7. He'll probably win. I mean, if he can't win Wisconsin, he should just quit right tomorrow night.
You've been wanting him to quit for four months, five months. Come on. Now it's Wisconsin that has to make him quit.
He must win big or he has no prayer. No, he hasn't. He's won a couple of caucuses.
No, the thing is, David, you got to admit you're misnamed the party because he's been winning all these states. But he's not getting anywhere.
Yeah, because he's winning caucuses in tiny little states. I think I pointed this out last time. Hillary won more delegates out of Florida. She netted more delegates out of Florida than all of these caucuses Bernie's won combined.
But a Bernie Sanders follower or someone who voted for Bernie Sanders, even here in the city of Chicago, doesn't care about delegates. They care about the fact that Bernie Sanders has won a couple states, but because of the strange math that we use to elect presidents, no one's paying attention.
Yeah, it's called democracy.
Well, I think people are paying attention, and I think people are hearing his message, so much so that in the month of March, he raised more than $40 million on the internet from, you know, little old ladies in tennis shoes who are deeply red, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, all of these kind of socialist backers out there are sending their money into the guy. You got to love that free speech, and you got to love the entire, you know, sort of Citizens United campaign fundraising program, right?
Oh, my God.
That's your pitch for Citizens United? That's great, Chris.
Your pitch for Citizens United
that was great.
Is that you can
that's a win.
Give money
that's
on the
win.
Internet.
Touche!
Well,
touche.
Do that before.
But he has to win.
I mean, look. He doesn't have to win. He just keeps getting
really,
money.
Seriously.
Going.
If he has any prayer whatsoever of
energized.
Winning the nomination, even just winning the pledge, even closing that 260 pledge delegate gap, he needs to win by large numbers.
They said 60, he's got to win two-thirds of the vote, essentially, moving forward. Like, he has to. I
thought it was like 78%.
Yeah, that's 67%. It's a lot. But and right now, he keeps throwing out super delegates. You got to change your mind because the populace, they want Bernie. But it's not necessarily true because the vote count, Hillary Clinton is still millions of votes ahead of her.
Hillary Clinton has 2.5 million more votes than Bernie. She's got over 1.1 million more than Trump.
Yeah.
So for all those who think that Hillary's really unpopular, she's doing so poorly, I promise you, Bernie would trade places with Hillary's position in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but it does speak to the division out there in the political landscape, whether you're Republican or Democrat. On the Republican side, it's Trump and everybody else. And over here, it's kind of Bernie Sanders and his folks and then everybody else. And on the Democratic side, they've just got Hillary. But with every week, with all of the fundraising and with his ability to win, even if he's winning in states that, you know, David wants to declare inconsequential, then even if that's all going on, he's gaining more and more of a foothold on the convention and more of a foothold, I would say, in the conversation post-selection. You know, I mean, he's not going away. And I think that
I think it causes issues for Hillary.
Does Bernie Sanders, I mean, if he doesn't win this nomination, is he a candidate for an independent run?
No. Well, first of all, and this is the same issue that's on the Republican side as on the Democratic side. Yes. Like 2/3 of the states have what are called sore loser rules, which says that if you ran as a major party candidate, you can't come back in that state and run for the same office with a different party or as an independent. So that pretty much kills it for Trump or Bernie Sanders. I don't think that's likely. Look, Bernie wanted to raise some issues. He's done way better than he expected to, way better than they thought they could dream of doing last summer. He'll come to the convention. He'll endorse Hillary. He'll support Hillary. He'll explain to his voters why it is that Trump should scare the bejesus out of them, and they will almost all come and vote for her in the fall.
Dave Lunding, Chris Roebling, let's take a break. We'll get the news tonight, and we'll come back. I got you guys till about 9:30, so we'll continue. Touché!
Touché!
Here on The Download. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right.
Touché.
Touché.
Touché. Touché. Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling in studio with me. We're previewing the Wisconsin primary tomorrow. Yeah. You know, we talked about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, but let's make a transition to the Republican side.
Okay.
Donald.
No, Chris wants to talk about Hillary and the indictment.
You brought it up first tonight.
You did. You did bring up it first. You're right.
You brought it up. 9:10.
I need like a gong that's like, dong. All right. So let's talk about this because it really is a delegates game now. There's a lot of moving and shaking. We saw Marco Rubio's going to hold on to his. Trump's making a move to try and get Kasich out.
What is happening? That was wild. That was fun.
That's not going to work.
That was fun.
That's not going to work.
So he told Kasich, get the hell out.
Yeah. He says he talked about it at the RNC meeting earlier late last week.
That was, I understand from folks that was bizarro mundo.
Really?
The so-called Trump campaign. You know, I mean, these things, this is pretty wild. I mean, come on. Everybody says politics so staid and stiff and stuffy and boring, predictable.
Well, Donald Trump said today that he could be more presidential, but if he did, 80% of the people wouldn't show up to his rallies.
Right.
He's not going to be presidential for now. But when he gets into the fall campaign, he's also not going to be presidential.
This is a reality TV show, and we're the pigeons. I mean, this is a reality TV show.
Wow.
He owns the rights,
right,
and he's going to package it.
Well,
and it's going to be.
I mean, it became an internet viral hit that one of his staffers, that was the original, like, came out and said he didn't have any. He didn't think he was even going to be close. This was just going to be a promotional campaign,
which we all assumed it would be.
But
a promotional
campaign. I honestly, all kidding aside, I do kind of question that, and I think it's important for us to remember in this very building. You know, he did show up. Mm-hmm. At the Tribune for the editorial board, which is available on the Tribune website, the editorial board interview back in June. And this was really one of his first stops after the announcement and his reference to who the Mexicans were sending over the border. Okay.
Right.
And he already by that moment, I believe he could sense it.
Yeah.
He knew that he was connecting. And what is truly amazing about the campaign, and you don't know if he's done it on purpose or if it's just dumb luck, but it goes on so long you begin to believe it's not just dumb luck. He has anticipated public opinion, and he has jumped ahead of it, whether it was immigration or, I would say, anti-establishment or sort of even his, and I hate to say this, and I think it's lousy campaigning, but the way that he's mocked some of his opponents, like this low energy thing about George W. Bush.
Yeah,
you know, he had a real somebody.
Jeb.
I don't know if that was
Jeb
or somebody
Jeb.
Else. Yeah,
but you know that was brought up this week by conservative talk show hosts in Wisconsin who have come together to boycott Trump, saying he's removed civility from politics, which I find awesome. Awesome oxymoron.
Well, particularly coming
from talk show hosts,
right wing talk show hosts. Yeah,
but there seems to be this. You know, the people are latching onto this idea that civility is important in politics, and even though we've seen it degraded over the years, what he's doing is 10 times over the line.
Oh yeah, no. We've pole vaulted over the civility line. I mean, look, this is something that, you know, we talk about a lot. Chris and I give each other a lot of grief, and we don't agree on really much of anything politically. But we can do it civilly. You can be civil. You don't need to be insulting. Last night I was on another show with a Trump delegate, and all he could
he's
do,
a delegate.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
all
Lord.
He could do is be as insulting as his candidate.
Oh, my
and I'm like,
goodness
there
sake.
Are options. You don't have to do it this way.
Well, let's talk about the actual delegate dance that's
yes,
happening. Does
yes,
Ted Cruz
okay.
have a – I mean, I know I he think, has a chance, but it, does he have what it
well,
takes
I
to
think,
to win the nomination?
You know, 24 hours from now, we're going to have a much better handle on the answer to that question. And Wisconsin could really signal a – popular in the sense of a voting repudiation of Trump. Now that's possible. I'm not saying right. I think it's maybe even likely at this moment. The polls have tightened, but I think that Cruz has done for a guy who was sort of dismissed 3, 4, 5 months ago as way too far to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a lot sounding a lot the way that people dismissed Reagan in 75 and 76 and in 70
other than the being totally unlikable part
and 79 and then in 80 Reagan wins and Reagan was very likable, but
exactly.
Cruz I know people say he's not, but what the heck. And look who we've got now. In any case, I think Cruz has done a masterful job on the diplomatic front in becoming something of a safe harbor, notwithstanding the extent to which folks in the United States Senate, folks on the campaign trail, I mean, folks who are actually involved at the Cruz level, tend not to like it.
Do moderate Republicans who are more in the center,
yes.
can they vote for Ted Cruz?
Yeah, I think that they can. I think that Cruz is the alleged extremism of Cruz is vastly overstated.
Not
remotely. I mean, Cruz is a guy who deeply questions the role government plays today and I think argues passionately for an appropriate restrained role for the federal government and an increased role for state governments.
So I want to answer your question yeah. differently than Chris, because I think that the...
As an expert on moderate Republicans.
Absolutely. I'm a lot closer to moderate Republicans than you are, my friend. But here's the thing. The answer to your question is, can Cruz win? Can he get to 1237
yeah.
between now and the convention? No. But that's not what he's trying to do. What he's trying to do is stop Trump from getting to 1237 before the convention. That he might be able to do.
Because then at the convention, you can horse trade and negotiate and somehow right. go out into the back smoke-filled back rooms and come out with a nomination? What do you think is going to happen?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, the most fascinating question right now is, let's say Trump doesn't have 1237, which he may or may not have 1237. Let's say he doesn't have 1237. Will they turn to, quote, fresh new face, i.e. Paul Ryan, or must they stay with one of the people who's run for office?
Oh, they can
in
do
which
that.
Case, it's Trump or Cruz. Now, you've heard me say on this show, and I am doubling down on this, the ticket is going to be Trump and Cruz. Because at the end of the day, neither of them are popular within the Republican Party. And the only way they guarantee that they are both on the ticket is if they combine their delegates.
Yeah, I think that's unlikely. I do agree with David that Cruz and in a vast phalanx of Republican officialdom, okay, also known as the hated establishment, have now lined up with a shared enemy, and that's Trump.
Right.
And Trump is taking it, if you will, on both sides, from Cruz and from the establishment. And this is part of the diplomatic thing that I think diplomatic success of Cruz's campaign. I think it is intended to prevent. It is first intended to prevent Trump of the 1237. Secondly, it's maybe Cruz can get to 1237. But mathematically, politically, practically, that's not likely. But if you stop Trump on the first ballot, then you've got an opportunity. I also want to say this. A lot of the folks elected, like this guy to whom David was referring a moment ago, a lot of the folks elected as Trump delegates around the country are folks who are utterly outside of the system. And goodness only knows what is going to happen when somebody from the system, okay, actually sits down to talk with them about Trump is gone. Now you've got to vote for Cruz or this or this or this. They're not going to understand that. They're not going to want to hear it.
That's why you have Trump whining about how unfair the Republican Party is being to him, poor Donald. Right. No, you just didn't understand the game.
It's hard to understand that because he's all about winning, but he doesn't know the game.
But it's as if somebody came in off the street, tried to develop a 50-story building in New York and didn't understand the rules. It's exactly the same thing. Well, he just doesn't understand this game.
Would you say it's like Obama negotiating with the Iranians?
No, I wouldn't say that at all.
Hey, the Iranians aren't really nice people, and they're sending all kinds of weapons to Yemen to destabilize our friends, come on. The Saudis.
All right, let me take a quick break.
I thought the Iranians would be nice to me because I am Barack.
With Chris Roebling and
Michelle,
Dave Lundy.
Help me out. Valerie, you told me it would be different.
We'll be back.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right. Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn action from the movie Dodgeball.
Those guys are great.
Yeah. Touche. They gave us a little touche.
Yeah, really.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. We're Touche every Monday night here on The Download, talking politics, national and local. I think we should switch. We only have about 5-6 minutes left, so maybe we could talk about, which is hilarious that that's all the time we're going to talk about the beginning of the spring session in Springfield. Oh. I mean, come on. The first thing I saw that today, and I'm like, good, you know, maybe it's time we're going to get some movement on the budget, but it seems like we're getting nowhere.
Can I talk?
Yeah.
No.
I'm talking about, here's what I'm talking about.
Can you? Yes, there I believe we of, all hey, know hey, you can
let's,
talk.
Let's be honest. Let's be real. The primary was a big...
Let's be honest, let's be real. Okay, hold on, everybody!
The primary was a big defeat for Rauner.
Ooh, okay.
Rauner looks like he's weak. Rauner does not look strong. The vaunted Rauner political machine looks like it can't deliver or that it makes bad judgments about where it's going to deliver, that neither of which are good conclusions to be out there. And then folks in the state house are beginning to think this is all coming down on us. And I can tell you, I don't know how much this has been reported, but I know that state house Republicans are talking to each other about flipping, and not flipping in the sense of, oh, we're going to be Democrats, but flipping in the sense of you. And David may know, cause he does more Springfield stuff. I don't really do any, but as I understand it, it's five or six or seven, whatever the number is. If they sit down and make a deal with Madigan,
Republicans in the House.
Yeah, then if with their votes and the votes that Madigan has that are reliable votes,
right,
then they have the veto-proof majority,
right,
which you don't need in the Senate.
Right,
because
there's 71 Democrats, but there's three or four wild cards, including Ken Duncan, that don't vote right with the majority. So Republicans have to vote for Madigan.
The point here is that these guys, if you represent Macomb, Illinois, and I don't know who does, and I'm not, right, I don't know who the Jane or John or Sally or Dan or whoever it is, and God love them, I'm sure they're great people, but and it might not even be a Republican, but if you're out there in Macomb, Illinois, if you're down in Carbondale, if you're in Charleston, you got EIU, SIU, WIU, or NIU up in DeKalb,
yeah, right,
you are looking at major malfunctions, and I think that there is what I hear time and time and time again when I speak with members of the General Assembly is a total lack of confidence that the governor has got a way out of this thing. He got himself into the cul-de-sac. He's been going around in circles.
He's back on the tour today saying he's doubling down on the same stuff he said nine months ago.
Madigan has been going around in circles, but Madigan's got a lot of votes and the governor doesn't. And the wheels of government are going to grind to a halt. And then who is going to be blamed? Are people, you know, and people
that
have,
seems to be what the bet is right now.
People
who's
going
to be blamed in November?
A lot of confidence in Madigan's ability to stick the tail on the elephant and blame the elephant. And that could mean terrible things for Rauner. So it's a very dynamic situation.
Dave, do you see Democrats waiting it out? Or do you see Democrats, like Chris is saying, like making a pact with a couple Republicans and moving forward on new revenue, new taxes, doing something that might be unpopular in political circles but is going to solve the budget crisis?
I find it, well, first of all, I appreciate the Chris's honesty on this because he's exactly right. The governor has made strategic mistake after strategic mistake, starting with when he decided to, instead of just attacking public sector unions, he decided to attack unions. It, because there easily could have been a wedge between public sector and private sector unions. But instead, the way he went about it, it drove unions together in a unity that I've not seen. And it was a huge strategic mistake. And every Republican I know says it was a huge strategic mistake. And the Ken Duncan thing, losing by such an enormous number, was just hugely humiliating. I don't care what the governor said about it. But the question is, does he recognize that and will he make changes? So Chris is right. The people who are the Republicans that are representing university towns, and not just university towns, but there's people forget that we had 26 years of consecutive Republican governors of the state. And what that means is there were an awful lot of union, Republican union members in AFSCME, in the government unions. And because of that, there are towns downstate where there's a lot of Republican union members, and they do not like where we're at right now. So what I've heard from Republicans I've talked to,
none of them were loyal to Governor Rauner at all in the primary. They were all
absolutely no question.
They were all for Kirk Dillard, and then they acted, and then the moment after the primary, they acted like, "Who the heck is Kirk Dillard?" Bruce, I love you, man.
I mean, that's how you do. That's party unity, right?
No, that's right. But so a lot of Republicans I know think that as things stand today, Madigan has a chance to pick up seats in the fall. And that would just be a total disaster for the governor.
For
I mean, he's what the Duncan race and the McCann race said is that money is not enough if you have a bad strategy and a bad candidate.
Let me say the first strategic error was having no strategy.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now have a seat. Let's start. Number one, we're going to have a strategy. Okay. Number one. Number two. And that strategy is going to include messages, and the messages are going to be compelling, and they're going to be ready to move people to do things. And then you're going to have delivery mechanisms, and you're actually going to deliver the messages. There's no strategy. The strategy was, I got my thing, they got their thing. Now we're going in our respective circles in the cul-de-sacs. That's that. Number two, has there been any consistent messaging? I mean, David brought up, I think, with some poignancy, this thing about going to Wilmette 4 days before the one-day strike in Chicago. And this indicates that there aren't people in the governor's office who are correlating what is he physically doing. There is a person, and he moves around the state, and then he goes and he talks, he says things. How does that relate to what's going on in the state? Yeah. And there isn't an integration between the actions and the circumstance.
And you can hear the frustration by my friend Chris here with his own party. I think the specific answer to your question is, will there be a deal where you'll have a half a dozen of Republicans joining the Democrats on a whole budget? No, there's no way that's going to happen. There's no reason Democrats are going to take all of the blame for the tax increase. Will there be a deal potentially on the MAP grants for the colleges? Yeah. I think that's likely.
All right. Last question real quick, because we're over time. Tomorrow, predictions for the Wisconsin primary.
Bernie by 5, and I think Cruz by only 1. I think Cruz pulls it out, but only slightly.
Chris?
Tough day for the front runners. Bernie and Cruz win.
There you go. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy. Touche every Monday here on The Download. Touché. Guys, thanks for the late night tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
It's going down,
all right, there's the music. Yes, it's Monday night here in the studio, 720 WGN. And you know what that means? It's time for the worst. It's our regular, if you're a regular listener, you know the segment. This is where we collectively bemoan and complain about the worst things in our society. You know what's the worst? That smell, that fire smell, that plastic burning fire smell on the L.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about? When you smell it, you're like, is that a fire? No, it's just like, maybe they break too hard or something. You know that smell I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah,
about? It's
or
the
somebody
worst
put
smell.
Like a pot of hair
and
lit it on fire in the middle of it.
And they never stop. They never say anything's wrong. It's just there. That's the worst.
Right.
That's the worst.
And you think it's the end.
Like, this is it. I'm going to have to climb up a hole to get out of this like I'm some sort of, like a...
This is the last smell I'm going to smell.
This is it.
Yeah.
All right, I've got some comedians and filmmaker in town or in the studio with us tonight. Beth Malewski, she's a Second City ETC alum. She's also was the host of Cash Cab Chicago. And she will be on stage at the Annoyance Theater tomorrow night for a benefit for Chicago Books to Women in Prison. It's an improv show. What time is that at?
That's going to be at 7:30.
Okay,
the ticket cost is $25. All the proceeds are going to Chicago Books to Women in Prison. We are a volunteer organization, and we send out books to women prisoners free of charge.
We'll talk more about it coming up here on The Worst. Also, Steve Delahoyne, filmmaker, Chicago filmmaker. I believe it was, 2007? It was Filmmaker to Watch.
2005. It's been a little while. But I'm still being watched.
You're still being watched. That's good. Steve Delahoyne, you can check out all his work at thehoyd.com and anywhere there's good material online. Steve had something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Both of you are here tonight to be our panel judges. But the real stars tonight are you at home, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can text your worst, or you can call, or you can go to Twitter and do hashtag the worst. What we're giving away for first prize tonight, this is really exciting. It's a pair of tickets, VIP tickets,
ooh,
to Beer Under Glass 2016. This is the craft beer party that's at the Garfield Park Conservatory. It's like a fundraiser in May. It kicks off Craft Beer Week here in Chicago, and it's a huge jam. There's like they open up all the greenhouses and everything, and they just drink beer.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you get to be this is VIP. There's general admission, but we don't roll like that.
No.
This is VIP.
Well, it's much different. I was picturing more like you had to like break some glass to get a beer.
Yeah, no.
I thought you just walked by it and you couldn't touch it. It was like a museum.
No,
where you're just
that could be part of it. I don't
that
know.
Looks
I don't
delicious.
Know. You know, I haven't done a lot of research on this, so that could be what
could
it
be
is.
It
could be an art project.
That seems safer from like a insurance point of view.
Anyway, that's first place. I also got a cool second place thing that I'll talk about in a little bit too, and also Lou Malnati's pizza. 312-981-7200. Pete Zimmerman is here. Pete, you know what? You're the reigning champion of the worst. Why don't you kick us off tonight?
All right. I was in Michigan over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, what were you doing?
I got married.
Oh,
as a matter of fact.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Give it
up. Wow. That's for the best. Hashtag the best. That's the Tuesday
coming
segment.
Up later.
Yeah, that's later.
But the know what the worst is? Eastern time.
Yeah, well, you're right.
Eastern time sucks. You got to wait till 11:35 to watch Saturday Night Live.
That's right. That's what you were doing on your wedding night, just waiting for Saturday Night Live at 11:30? All right. Okay.
Well,
that's
how
you guys roll. Yeah, you're right. I agree. And it's
terrible.
Also like the worst is anyone who lives in that in Northwest Indiana where you go like 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
And it's Eastern time zone. That's the worst.
I bet you could use that to your advantage, though, at times or something.
if you
could game the system somehow. I don't know how it would work because I don't live there. But
Peter, were people late to your wedding because of the time change?
No, but to Justin's point, we had our ceremony and whatnot was in New Buffalo. And then we had a dinner at Stop 50, which is in Indiana. It's a 6-minute drive away, but
different
central time zone.
Oh,
so yeah, it screwed everybody up. We figured it out eventually, but yeah.
No. Oh man.
Everyone got fed late.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Eastern time, the worst.
All right. Eastern time, the worst. All right. Let's get the text going. Cause they're coming in here. This is a good one. I got this one a little bit earlier when we said we were doing this, and where is she at? She said the 224 said that she got a tattoo on Thursday. I'm finding it here. Okay, here it is. 224. The worst is after being sick all winter, my kids and I finally got healthy, only all get colds during spring break. Then my 2-year-old rammed into my brand new tattoo.
I'm gonna guess it was a calf tat.
No, it was a shoulder tat.
Oh.
Of like, because then she sent a picture of her shoulder.
Ooh.
Let's
see.
Yeah. I don't know if you can see it.
What does that do to the tattoo, or does it just hurt because
it's
sore?
I think it hurt because it's sore. She just did it on Thursday. And like,
it doesn't smudge it or anything.
And I'm thinking a 2-year-old ram is not like, hi, Mom. It's more like, you know, rumming like a truck or something right into her shoulder. That's got to hurt.
That's a lovely tattoo. It's nice, by the way. Nice work, 224.
There you go, 224. Okay, so some other stuff here. 630, indecisive people at the drive-thru are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they realize they're taking too long and then pay for your coffee. That's never happened to me.
No.
I've never done it either.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever, you've never paid it forward?
No.
No, that's not a thing? That's not a real thing.
No.
Well, is it only a Facebook thing?
I think it's like a movie. Like, it's like there's a movie one time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everyone's like,
it's
pay it forward.
Thing. Yeah.
Worst is going to, this is 6-3, worst is going to the 7-Eleven and paying for coffee and it's old and it tastes like a shoe.
I've done that. Yeah,
that one's on you,
terrible.
Man.
Yeah.
Like,
but you know what you're going into in that transaction. Yeah. It was like, the hot dog was terrible. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised.
3-1-2. This is a good one. The worst is getting excited to play the worst and realizing that the first prize is literally against your religion.
Wow.
So I guess you can't drink.
Yeah. You can still enjoy a night out at the Garfield Park.
No, Protestants can't be in conservatories.
Yeah, so maybe... It's a greenhouse.
They're anti-flower.
A couple of religions that are anti-flower.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Steve Dellowhead, why don't you start us off? What do you got for the worst?
I keep reading stories over and over again about robots are taking over the world and no one's going to have any jobs. And I sort of believe it. And then I tell my wife about it usually like right before we go to bed and I'll say like, it's the worst. Our kids aren't going to have jobs. Everybody's going to be enslaved by and then like, good night. And so not only is my thing the worst that I hate reading about this all the time, but I'm the worst in my wife's eyes because I keep talking.
It's like a triple worst.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I like that.
Training, yeah.
Old man Delahoyd in his boxer shorts at night.
Yeah,
the robots are taking over.
I'm gonna brush my teeth real soon.
The robots.
No, but every Saturday I read that. Well, this is going to play well to that last comment. I like reading the Wall Street Journal, every week there's a big op-ed about robots are it's too late. They're all going to take our jobs. So,
did you see the online video of where they made the robots like the
yeah,
dogs? That freaked me. Like they were like dog, and they were like kind of like I was freaked out.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the. Microsoft thing with they put that like the Twitter bot, the AI thing that
was
supposed
to,
and it became like
it was racist,
Hitler loving, like, not even within, it was like within 12 hours, it became
the internet
this,
made it racist, sexist, like,
and that,
porn bot.
That put me at ease a little bit, like, there's still a little ways to go. they're still like,
all right, it's at least 20 years,
out
the, we'll be fine. All right, Beth, what do you got?
Well, this kind of piggybacks on Steve's maybe a little bit because it has to do with
robots.
Machinery. Beep, boop. The credit card chip readers worst.
They are the worst.
Because I've yet to not be belittled by a service person about either using it or not using it. Or they don't work, or you put it in and they're like, take it out. It's not ready to be used yet. Then why is it in there already?
The machine is so passive aggressive. It gets really mad at you if you take it out.
And then Chase, the Chase one is truly like a robot screaming at you if you don't take your card
out
first.
Take it out, take it out.
Take it. And so I don't even, and I also don't understand how they protect us more.
No,
I don't
no.
understand the technology behind them. It seems like
it's European,
it would be.
So there you go.
Oh well, there
so,
you
yeah,
go.
I don't know. I don't know either, but it's European. So
the Viennese are doing it.
In the old country,
the worst too is like I was one time I used it at Whole Foods or used it at the Target, a nice Target, and then I went to like kind of like a rundown Jewel, and I stood in line for a long time to get there, and I got up there, and I'm like, I'm putting it in there, like, what are you doing?
Yes.
Like the woman's like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's a chip card. And they're like, we don't use a chip card here, you yuppie scum.
They
and
belittle
like,
you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, this is a swipe? You guys swipe?
Yeah.
Kleenex out and put it over my card so I wouldn't get something on there. It's like bad.
What do you want me to do? Write a check?
At all the Jewels near us, there's signs that say, like, it's coming soon.
There's like a laminated peeling thing that's like, been sticking in the chip reader for months. But they can't get the chip reader to work.
They can't. They bought faulty technology.
And why am to be excited about it?
312-981-7200. We got a ton of texts here. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some more worst here on The Download. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst here on WGN Radio. The Download, 312-981-7200. We're playing for two VIP tickets to Beer Under Glass, the big craft beer kickoff party at the Garfield Park Conservatory coming up in May. Also, we have some other prizes to give away.
I got it right here. I knew it was in the circular file. complimentary registration for up to four riders at the Bike the Drive on May 29th. That's a great prize.
That's great.
Kick off the summer and enjoy Lakeshore Drive car-free and carefree. So there you go. And then we got a Lou Malnati's Pizza. So we got a lot of great stuff. 312-981-7200. It's wide open.
Yo, yo.
Steve Delahoyd, filmmaker, comedian, all around, what would you call it? Your raconteur?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That's the first thing I would that's say. That's on your business card. Myself. Yeah.
Steve, you can find all his work at thehoyd.com. Also, Beth Maluski, former Second City ETC ensemble member. Also, the host of Cash Cab Chicago. That's, I mean, when was that? That was now 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 years ago. Yeah. Also, Steve shot my web series.
I did.
Called Beth from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. There you go. See? Also, Beth is going to be on stage tomorrow night at The Annoyance. Yeah, that's great, guys. She's going to be doing a benefit for Chicago Books to Women in Prison. It's an improv show. So it's not just you. There's going to be a whole ensemble of improvisers that are helping out.
Yes, we're going to have 16 improvisers and Deanna Griffith Irons, who is head of the diversity program at Second City, who is formerly incarcerated, is going to tell her story. And we're going to improvise some scenes around her.
Great. All right. There you go. Sounds lovely. Prison humor. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oh, yeah. And all proceeds go to Chicago Books to Women in Prison.
All right, Pete Zimmerman, you want to kick us off on round two? We need a bell. Rose got that bell. He's got this whole thing over here, this 360 systems thing. I can press like a button and play like a car screeching away.
We can spend the next half hour.
I don't know.
Audition all of them.
That was close. There you go, yeah.
Yeah, something like
the
that.
Splash, making a splash. Round two, the splash round. Pete right. Zimmerman, what do you got?
I'm going to go with orange garnishes. They're worst. You go out for brunch or breakfast and stuff. You get a nice, you know, pancake or a French toast. And then they put that orange garnish. Who's eating those orange garnishes?
I am.
Yeah, I probably eat them too.
No, you don't. Neither of you.
You like shove the whole orange slice in your mouth kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I agree. There's, like the really thin kind of orange garnish I'm not going for.
Would you like it if there was a whole orange?
Yes.
No orange. Why are you ruining my French toast with that?
All right.
That was orange garnishes.
Million dollar restaurant
that
idea.
Was.
Now, okay. I may ask to go next because this one might piggyback
all
off
right,
of his.
Let's go,
and
Beth,
actually, this might relate to your weekend. Here's what is the worst: is fruit in cake. Do not put fruit in my cake. There's nothing worse than when you go to a wedding. I just want a good piece of cake.
Yeah, chocolate.
And then raspberry swirl sneaks up on you, and I want to throw that cake at somebody. So, Pete, did you have fruit in your cake?
No, we did not.
Yes, my man.
There you go.
I mean, I'm also engaged, getting married soon, sometime soon. I want like a sheet cake from like a Costco or a Sam's Club. Just give me a nice, dirty, sugary sheet cake.
I don't want to, I don't want to give any endorsements because, you know, I can get tons of money.
Right.
For this kind of stuff. But Mariano's can do a damn good sheet cake.
For real?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what they do, I don't know her name, and I have an 8-year-old birthday party, and they were able to draw like Pokemon, or not Pokemon, I can't even remember, one of those things, right, on there, Kirby from the video game Kirby.
Okay.
Sure. She was able to do that whole thing, almost like silkscreen by hand. Whoa. And they gave me this huge cake, and I'm like, this is great, and I was going to give her some money. She's like, we can't take the money, no tip. And I was like, oh, wow. So I just felt like, now this is I'm paying it forward. Boom.
That's right.
Yeah. I just gave it to the blowtorch here on WGN, 50,000 people.
Wow.
50,000 watts. And I don't know her name.
Well,
she works at the Mariano's.
She makes Kirby cakes, and she's about to get some orders.
Yeah. There's going to be a line.
I don't think she gets more money for the cakes. I think she's still an hourly employee, but still.
it's been no change in her life.
It's more of an ego thing for her.
She's going to have more stress.
She's going to do it right. All right. What do you got, Steve?
The worst thing, and Illinois doesn't do this, so good on Illinois, is states that have their website listed on their license plates on cars.
Dumb. Really?
And I don't remember, like, if you're just, say, for example, and maybe Missouri does this, I don't remember the last time I saw it, but if you're driving behind a car from Missouri and you see, oh, Missouri.gov, like, oh, Missouri looks great. I'm going to need to check that out as soon as I get home. I just got to remember the name of this website.
Missouri.gov? You get it up on the phone. You check the phone.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're checking out parks. What's a good restaurant?
Yeah.
But Missouri.
You've crashed your car because you've been driving.
Because it's a waste of ink that you could otherwise put, like, some like motto or something.
Yeah, right. The website should not replace the motto.
No.
But Illinois has kept with Land of Lincoln. So,
All right. Well, let's go to the before we go to the news. Let's go to a couple more texts here. Okay, 815 says I'm only reading this one, Pete, for you. The worst is listening to last Wednesday's bit about Trump's number one fan as I drove home from work. And that's a reference to a segment we did, which was very funny with Connor O'Malley, where he plays the Trump supporter. This person did not like that. I thought it was great, especially when he tried to win his girlfriend. He had his ex-girlfriend, and he just started saying, "Take me back," like she was listening. Mm-hmm. That was really good.
Was that Adam, the call-in?
Yeah, okay. Adam, yeah. 708 says, the worst is people who steal wheelchair-accessible cabs that you have to pre-order.
I didn't know that was a thing.
That is bad.
And
that
I
is,
was a
that's
cab
bad.
Driver.
That's, yeah, that really? Is, that's bad. There's nothing evil. To say. You're right.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
That seems pre-planned.
Like, you have to jump in front of a guy in a wheelchair and be like, hey, man, this one's mine.
That seems
see
like
ya.
Neighbor.
This is a good one. 708 also says, men who order hot tea or a strawberry daiquiri.
Either or.
Either or.
Wow.
Yeah. They go a little further, and it gets a little on radio. It's not appropriate for radio.
You're not
going
to do well like in the islands or in any sort of British countries. Or
tea was almost one of mine because basically it just tastes like soil water to me. Mm-hmm. Tea is the worst.
Tea is the worst.
not great.
All right. Let's keep going here. Let's see. Greg from Downers Grove says, the worst is when you buy something from Goodwill, like a picture or a product with a cool graphic. And then they put their near unremovable price sticker on it in the worst spot, ruining the item.
Life hack, nail polish remover.
There's so much more I want to know about the graphic and what object it is.
Yeah.
773 says, when you give homeless people money and they expect more. Mm. 630 says, idiots that turn their signal on when the light turns green.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so these are we're not getting anywhere. 847 says, when the bathroom is right next to the kitchen.
Ooh, like in a restaurant, I get that.
Or
that's
home,
a bad
or a
time.
House, yeah.
Yeah.
But you, I mean, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I used to have a bathroom kind of in my kitchen. Well, no, that sounds terrible, but like...
like there was a sink, the fridge, and the toilet all
I've been living. Using the sink the whole time.
Beth's been living in an SRO for the last 4 years. She thought it was an upscale studio. All right, let's take a break because we're late on the news. We come back more of the worst here on The Download, 312-981-7200. It's the worst here on The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Beth Malewski, Steve Delahoyt are with me tonight. Beth is a Second City alum who hosted Cash Cab Chicago. She's going to be on stage tomorrow night at The Annoyance, which is a benefit for Chicago Books to Women in Prison. It's an improv show. How did you get involved in this?
Chicago Books to Women in Prison. I found really just looking for volunteer opportunities to like women-based volunteer opportunities. And it is a small but mighty operation, man. We run out of the basement of a church on the north side and, send books to incarcerated women that we get letters from and orders from. And it's pretty incredible.
Do you need, besides the money, the ticket, do you need people to send you books or you have the books?
Oh, if you go to the Chicago Books to Women in Prison website.
What is that? That's a long website.
Yeah, it's chicagobwp.org.
Chicagobwp.org.
You can donate money. We also have an Amazon wish list. So women request specific books we may not have. So if you want to fill our wish list, that's amazing as well. Many, many different ways you can donate. Yeah, or come see the show tomorrow.
There you go. Steve Delahoyt, you're just you're not doing
I'm just
that.
Here.
You're not doing that.
Nah.
Steve Delahoyt, thehoyt.com. Yeah. You can see Steve all over the internet. Great filmmaker and comedian here in town. Also co-hosts and co-presents, produces Funny Ha Ha at the Hideout.
Yes.
All right. So let's get back into the game here. 312-981-7200. We're giving away tickets to Beer Under Glass. We're giving away complimentary registration to Bike the Drive. Cost money to get into that, so you get free entry. And we're also giving away Lou Malnati's pizza for first, second, and third place tonight on The Download. All right, so the worst, 312. The worst is when the food Nazis who want to demand other people eat what the food Nazis think they should eat. Food Nazis, get a life. Wow.
Just like in their family or at a restaurant?
I don't know. Yeah. Someone's like, you can't eat that.
A waiter suggesting specials?
That could be. Yeah. Yes, this is a good one. I like this one. 815 says, the worst is when you try to get all of your bags of food to the door in one trip in one hand, and your house keys are in the pocket of the same hand that the bags are in.
Yeah.
That happens all the time.
With kids, too. Like, where I'm
you just know it right away. You're like, oh, that's not going to be in the left pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be right where it is.
Put those bags down.
I made a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
My life is going to be altered by this decision.
Yeah, no coming back.
We'll walk
this.
Into
no
the lake.
Back.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
847, seeing one of the big bosses walking around with an untucked Hawaiian shirt, and he's overweight with his stomach exposed.
Ay, ay, ay. Somebody's working at Tommy Bahama.
Yeah.
The big bosses.
Oh, here come the big bosses. Hey, it's got like... 773 says the worst is when a police officer pulls someone over in a busy intersection and it takes forever to write a ticket. That is true. That is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they ever just pull over? Yeah. I've seen like officers stop in the middle of an intersection.
Yeah.
It takes 4 extra seconds.
I had this happen the other day where we were driving on I think it was right over by a Chicago Fire set. You know, they were shooting that show, Chicago Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of see the cameras and the trucks coming up. And I came up on an intersection. And there was nothing blocking. It was just you're going to go by the trucks. And a police car, like an SUV, just kind of meandered through the light really slow.
Ugh.
And then just blocked, like almost headlight to headlight on me, like saying, you can't go this way. Like, there was no hand signal to get out of the car. They didn't try to communicate. They were just like,
it's just showdown.
This is not the way you're going.
Wow.
And you're, so I like had to like submissively like, I guess I'll just make a U-turn. Like,
and then like, he ticketed you for
probably.
No.
Wow. But it was a very strange, like, I'm like, this is, I guess I'm just supposed to pick up the unwritten, the unsaid communication here with this officer.
Yeah.
Like, all right. So let's, Pete, what do you got?
I'm gonna go on this train of thought here with the police officers. And this comes courtesy of Joe Green, my father-in-law. We spent a lot of time over the weekend doing the worst.
Oh, good.
Like we just kind of hang out. Like, you know, it's the worst.
It's a great hangout.
And I was actually quite thankful that he was playing it so much that I was thankful he actually did the service. I was actually thinking, I was nervous that he might do in the service. Like, you know what the worst is?
You know what the worst is? You know, when it comes to weddings, you know what the worst?
But police officers on cell phones is a thing that gets to Joe Green in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
And then his other one was when you're driving on the Edens, it could be anywhere, where you're driving, you're kind of, you know, a lane goes from 3 to 2. Or what have you, or a lane's closed, 2 to 1, and you're following along nicely, going, merging like you're supposed to, and then the guy that comes up and goes speeds up on the left and then like kind of sneaks in.
That's a universal the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've all been that guy at some point, but that's a universe. Everyone knows, like, well, you just spit in the face of society with that move, you know, where you're just like, you think you're better than everybody else in every car that's listening.
Yeah,
who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. You're a regular food Nazi.
You really are.
Yeah.
You're an Eden's Nazi.
Yeah.
All right. What do you guys got? Beth, what do you got?
Here we go. The worst is the people shopping for tiny houses on Tiny House Hunters. because no matter what, they go into the house and go, wow, this is small.
Wow, look at this.
What were you expecting?
This is a small house. This is a tiny house.
Wow. Wait, is the bathroom this small? Oh my gosh, this is really small.
The worst is, the worst is the producers of the tiny house show. Like, tell us what you're seeing. What are you seeing?
Exactly.
How small is it? Is this too small?
Or they tell them to say it, exactly.
Yeah, right.
And that also like kind of bleeds into like the European house hunters where they're like, whoa, like, oh, there's a bidet. Like, they're so confused that it's different. You're in another country. Also, you wanted a tiny house.
Right.
It's going to be 40 square feet by
That's
40 square
so good.
Feet.
Do they go into that show saying, like, we're in the market for a tiny
Absolutely.
House?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's what really? They want. We want to downsize. We want to get rid
we're
of everything.
We're going tiny,
And then they freak out. They're like, we can't sleep in a loft.
Why well, not? Well, tell us why. Beth, tell us why. Tell the camera why is just too tiny.
Did you expect it to be this small? I mean, it's a it's a shed. What did you expect?
Let's do it again. How tiny? This is so
tiny.
Oh, it's the worst.
Oh my God, it's so tiny.
Oh.
Bigger.
bigger. It's called tiny houses. And then they always end up going with like a storage container because it's just like 100 feet of empty space.
I can get into this thing. Yes, it's got a lid on top. It's great.
Yeah, just buy a house, you dummies.
And they validated at the top of like, here's why we want a tiny house.
Like, yeah, it's like we want to get rid of our possessions. They're only like $35,000. I'm like, what do you expect?
It's a yuppie trailer.
Yeah.
That's what they should call it.
It's a hipster trailer.
I haven't heard about this. No, that's amazing.
I swear to God, you could turn on an episode tonight and somebody will be like, oh, man, this is small.
This is so tiny.
Man, wow. This is tiny.
All right. What do you got, Deloitte?
I feel mine is too newsy, but I'm going to go for it anyway. So any interview with a GOP candidate, they ask them, will you support whoever's going to win, mm-hmm. and it's the most idiotic question because of what are they gonna like? Yeah, of course I will. Like they're always gonna say, "I plan on winning." It's like if you ask a player at a team, like even if you don't win the World Series, are you still gonna like the Braves?
Right?
Like yeah, I'm gonna like the.
It's
Braves.
Like today or yesterday, we were talking about this earlier, complaining about Scottie Pippen. They kind of asked Scottie Pippen walking into a stadium. They said, "Hey, Scottie, who would win? You guys or the Golden State Warriors?"
Oh yeah,
we'd kill him. Just breaking news.
yeah,
we gotta get this to the crawl.
Yeah,
if this
isn't
on the crawl, people aren't gonna know. And all day, Scottie Pippen says they would beat, and it's like, oh my God, news.
No,
slow down with your Sunday Twitter. Sunday Twitter. Sunday Twitter producer on CNN. All right, we got to take a break and come back, and we're gonna. I still have a few more I want to get through, and then we'll give the top three, and we'll give away some prizes. Stay with us. It's the worst here on the download. I'm Justin Coffin, Beth Malewski, Steve Delahoyd in studio with me. You can see Beth on stage at the Annoyance Theater tomorrow night for the benefit. Steve Delahoyd, you can check out his work at thehoyd.com. We've got a ton of... I want to go through the ones that are here because I think we got our top three, but let's keep going. 773 says fur is the worst. 773, Chicago Sub-Zero Winter, checking oil under the hood of the truck.
Is that a euphemism?
Oh, no, helper. Yeah, right. Helper starts truck. Hmm? Norwegian rat jumps out of the fan blade and covers your face in blood.
That is a euphemism.
Wow. Like, that's specific.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That happens more than just once?
Yeah, I think that's so. Oh, man, I hate
frequently?
When this happens. Right.
Wow.
Rat
problem.
Okay, I like this one. 630s. When you're with a hot chick, and start right there. That's
amazing.
Okay. And you take a sip of your drink and it goes down the wrong pipe.
Oh,
yeah, windpipe. I just like that it starts with you're with a chick.
It doesn't matter. If you're with your grandma, grandma's going to be like, it's okay. Like,
okay. I understand that.
Yeah.
The hot chick, you're like,
coughing.
This is my chance.
Yeah.
And I went down the wrong pipe.
I got red-faced.
I can never be with a man who coughs. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm leaving.
I am French, and I cannot believe
this. I'm too hot for
someone to drink less. The worst is people complain there's nowhere to park and their garage is packed with 30 years of crap they never use. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The worst is when the stretch bus cuts you off and then it blocks you for a long time. The worst is 773. The worst is ripping your pants in public while trying to pick up your keys.
Well,
no. 312. When you realize your date's not late, she's not coming. Oh, come on. 630. Yes. The worst is free balloons at restaurants, especially with whiny children. That's good. I like that one. I agree. It's just like, I don't want to take this home. I could keep this the whole time now.
It's the free part is what's confusing.
like where are they getting them?
No, that they don't want, like, if they had to pay for them, would
they'd
that
be okay?
Okay?
Yeah. 630 says the worst is men who wear their pants at their waist. Deal breaker.
I truly don't. Where are you supposed to wear them?
Guys? Like maybe they're into like the swagger. Mm-hmm. You know, like you where your pants are down like Kanye West, like they're down to your knees kind of.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's
or they cool. like them higher.
Or maybe they like
too
them higher.
High.
Yeah.
Or
right.
yeah, or they like them
cuz the waist, I mean that's so 90s to wear your pants at your waist.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Something to think about.
That is real color me bad.
Mm-hmm. 773, the worst is people who walk and text in a long line at a restaurant. Okay. 773, the worst is people who can't choose a walking path on the sidewalk. It's like, where you go, they go.
They're usually texting.
Yep. The worst are people who park in handicapped spots when they're not even handicapped.
Going to hell.
The 773, the worst, those tiny TVs in the cabs. Too loud. That's a good
it's
one.
It's true. Yeah,
it is. You always press the mute button.
Right.
It doesn't usually work, yeah.
630 says when they put a slice of lime in my gin and tonic instead of a wedge that could be squeezed. Mm. And then they say into the drink, but they write into the drunk. So
one too many gin and tonics.
That could be, yeah. All right. Okay, so we got them all. All right. All right, you ready to go? All right, so here we go. We got three people to give gifts tonight. The gifts are Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. Second place is going to get a complimentary registration for up to four riders at the MB Bike the Drive on Sunday, May 29th. Kick off the summer and enjoy Lakeshore Drive car-free and carefree at this 15th annual event. Register and get more information online at mbbikethedrive.org. So that's a pack of four. And first place is two VIP tickets to Beer Under Glass 2016. This is, of course, the fundraiser for the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance, which also kicks off Craft Beer Week here in Chicago. So third place, as I look, I say, okay, you ready on third place? Third place is from 815. The worst is when you try to get all your bags of food to the door in one trip in one hand. And your house keys are in the pocket on the same hand that the bags are in.
Ugh.
True.
That is the worst.
It is
true.
Third place. Way to go, 815. All right. Let's go to second place, which is going to be 312. This is for the four riders at the Bike Drive. Okay. 312. The worst is getting excited to play the worst and realizing that the prize is literally against my religion.
Hope bikes aren't.
So then we decided that, you know what? Nobody's religion has exercise as you can't exercise. So you won four tickets to Bike the Drive. Congratulations, 312. And first place on the line with us. Here we go. I'm very excited about this. First place. Men who order hot tea or strawberry daiquiris. Shannon, you win. Shannon, congratulations on that.
Thank you. So excited.
So what is it about hot tea that really turns you off?
You know, I work in a restaurant, and it's like the most time-consuming beverage to get somebody because there's 18 components to it. And really, your throat hurts. Really? You get the sniffle.
I want to be the one that's like, I could go for some tea. I could go for some hot tea.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Mm-hmm. I haven't had a hot tea in a long time.
Because then you got to bring out the box with all the teas in it. And I hear you, Shannon. Yep.
What do you think about Shirley Temples? My wife used to work at a restaurant in college.
I'm okay with it.
You're
okay?
Oh, really? Because that was her hated drink when she worked at a restaurant.
Nope, that's totally fine.
That's fine.
It takes two seconds.
It takes 2 seconds. No. Okay. And the strawberry daiquiris is just more like, come on, that's a girl drink.
And we're in Chicago. We're not in the Caribbean. Together. Order a scotch. Be a man.
Do you guys have pina colada? Oh, nice. There's a swirl. I'll get the daiquiri pina colada swirl.
My gut says Shannon's going to like Beer Fest.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, Shannon. Two VIP tickets to Beer Under Glass 26. Thanks for playing tonight.
Thank you so much.
Hold on a line. All right. And Steve Delahoyd and Beth Maluski, thanks so much for playing tonight. Great to have you guys. I got to have you back.
Thank you. Back. Sure.
This is a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Patty Vasquez. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Take you from 11 to 2. 2 o'clock, Nick DiGiulio. All the way up to the 5 o'clock business report. And then 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran. And we start it all over again. Chicago band Fort Francis is playing at City Winery on the 21st of April. It's an album release party as the band's putting out their first feature-length album since 2010. It's called Allo. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay, good. A truly indie Chicago band is in studio with us tonight to play some live music here on Michigan Avenue. Dave McMillan and Aaron Kaiser from Fort Francis. Good to see you guys. Thanks for coming back.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us.
Good to see you.
Let's talk about it. I mean, what does it take to put an album together? I mean, because the last time we talked, I think you guys had put out an EP, was it?
Yeah. I feel like the last time we'd probably put out like what we called like a digital 7-inch, which is basically just kind of, I think that might be code for like, we don't have enough money yet to put out a whole record.
Right.
This is the checking. So, that was the checking account album.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The savings is coming out next.
Yeah. Yeah. So the new, I mean, you know, people listen to music so much differently now. So putting out a record to us though, I think is still like, it's like a very special thing, you know? Like, even though everyone might consume music differently,
right?
Whether it's streaming or however you get your music, you know, for us, outside of the hilarity of money in the music business, it's also just that we really wanted to have a cohesive record, and we really wanted to feel like we had, like, you know, that it warranted putting out a whole body of work, you know? We put out our first record as this band in 2010, and we put out an EP, I think, in 2013. And sort of that digital 7-inch, this 2014 or so. And anyway, here we are.
What I've loved about you guys, I mean, we talked about this the last time you were in, just about making independent music. I mean, that you guys have really made your name by going independent. Like, you're not necessarily seeking out a record deal or trying to find somebody else to pay your way, even though that would be nice, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's something to that when you're trying to produce music independently. It does take resources and getting it's a monumental feat to get a feature length put together.
Yeah, thanks for that nice compliment, Justin. It is though. It's you know, I think it gives us, and I think anyone in our shoes, any independent band, it gives you a really good appreciation, you know, for what it takes. Like, when you're ready to put this thing out, I mean, it's like you, man. You've got your own show, and you know what it takes, like, throughout your career to get your own, you know, your own thing. And so I think a record is very much the same. I mean, when we're the ones paying for it and doing the legwork to play shows, you know, we have an understanding of like, well, this is what it took to get to this point, which is, you know, we're like 3 weeks away or so from putting out the record. And now it's like, okay, now we got to make sure people hear it.
Well, I mean, how do you do that? I mean, obviously if we all had that formula, but for you guys, I mean, you've been obviously cultivating a following, you play the shows. I mean, you got a big show at City Winery.
Yeah.
I mean, is it just the age old put up some posters and keep trying to get the word out on Fort Francis?
To an extent.
Yeah, there's certainly, I do think.
Which one of you guys is in charge of going to the dry cleaner and put your poster in the window?
Yeah.
David does everything. We'll just be completely honest.
Hey, I'm in this band,
I'm not going to try to claim.
Hey, can I put my poster up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any space I can have?
Yeah. Only it's like digital laundromats.
Yeah.
Not
that's a new
popular
thing. Right.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, you know, on the promotional side, I mean, it is... you know, it's a grind. It's just as much work as actually making the record. But I do think even though so much has changed, it's still like there's nothing more valuable than word of mouth, and then your friends telling people like, hey, I listen to this band Fort Francis and I really like them. I mean, that's how I still listen. Like, if you told me to listen to someone tonight, I'd be much more inclined to listen to them than if I saw their poster somewhere. That's how I find out about music too.
Well, there's a kid from Chicago, Kanye West.
I've heard that. He's a child.
He's really, really. I mean, check his. It's hard to get his stuff. I check it out.
I've been seeing his name everywhere.
All word of mouth. Dave McMillan and Aaron Kaiser with the band Fort Francis. They're playing City Winery on the 21st. They're putting out their feature length album, their first since 2010, called Allo. What are we going to hear? Let's hear some music.
This is the first single from the record. It's called Building a Wall.
Building a Wall, Fort Francis, here on the download.
I've seen enough to ride an ocean. I've gotten good at getting lonesome. while you've gotten good at giving up on everyone. When will I learn to turn my eyes off? Why are you sleeping with your clothes on? Don't cover me up, don't cut me out, don't drag me in. I'm building a wall. I'm building a wall. Keep me away from the shallow dreams, standing on movie screens and playing out of time. There are no easy truths, there's only me and you, the pictures of who we used to be coursing through our veins. Memories are not meant to be kept inside a frame. Before we drive out to the East Coast tonight, I will drive myself insane. I'm building a wall. The back of my mind. Now put me on your shoulders, dear. We got a long way to climb. In the back of my mind, I'm building a wall. In the back of my mind, I'm building a wall. In the back of my mind, I'm building a wall. In the back of my mind.
Yeah, there we go. Woo! Fort Francis live in studio here in the Allstate studio on Michigan Avenue here on 720 WGN. Let's take a quick break. We come back. One more song?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, the band Fort Francis, Aaron Kaiser and Dave McMillan. They have a new album out. It's called Allo. They're playing the City Winery on the 21st of April. Allo, is that just hello? What is it?
That's hello in Lithuanian. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So obvious.
Yeah. No, I was like, your new record, is it Allo?
Allo.
Most people try to avoid doing things that are impossible to pronounce properly, but we just said, that's fine.
That's yeah. Indie of you guys.
We can roll with that.
Everything's indie.
Yeah. Most people spell our band name wrong. So.
Actually, yeah, everyone's.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we went to Lithuania this summer. There's a tie-in.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. That would be great, actually, if it was just, there's no, like, guys, hey, man, what's the connection with your record? Man, we wanted something four letters. It's just easier.
You guys are even indie with your pronunciations. Yeah. We're just like, hey, man, you know, we don't buy into what the man's trying to.
Exactly.
trying to verbalize.
Yeah.
All right, so what's next? I mean, so this here comes the push for this. I mean,
yep.
It's the beginning of the sort of quote-unquote tour. You're going to start City Winery, but
yeah.
Here comes the sort of the second part of your band. You did the music. Now you got to promote it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, the end of this month is great. We'll be on the road for like a week and a half. We're doing Midwest to the Northeast, Southeast, and back home, kind of most of the some new cities for the band too, I guess.
Yeah.
But other, you know, places where we've done pretty well. And then this summer we're doing, I guess they're not announced yet. We're doing a bunch of one-off festival stuff throughout the summer. And then we'll see where, I mean, you know, honestly, the hope is that this record will kind of carry us through the end of the year. So the fall will be another round of touring. And Jess, I know this is your favorite show. So I think this is, you know, the record's been getting some placements, and we were just in Teen Mom 2. Mm-hmm. It's on MTV. I didn't know if you DVR'd that episode.
You're always doing that.
You know, so we've seen a real success from one of the songs that was placed with a lot of the teen mom
area
demographic. They like the record. So,
are you guys gonna give me a Kids Bop? Is that next for you guys? You're gonna make it to the Kids Bop records?
That's what you call music.
Yeah, that's what it
48.
Is.
We'll take anything. You know,
well, by now it's got to be like 148.
Yeah. Where there's just a bunch of 12-year-olds building a wall, and you're like, wow, that's
yeah. They're playing Minecraft and listening to our stuff. Hey, kids, come on, if you need some inspiration.
All right, the band Fort Francis is playing at the City Winery on the 21st of April. Their new record Allo is out then. And that's an album release party, but they're here in studio. Let's get one more song before you. What are we going to hear?
Awesome. This is called Anonymous.
Anonymous, Fort Francis in studio.
Forgetful eyes to feed. Let's be the stars in a book that no one will ever read. With spaces too small and a plot too big to understand how we fit in and where we might land. Time lives inside a burning house. Oh, let's be anonymous. Oh, we can hide away from the words, from the world. Let's go underground. Don't make a move, don't make a sound. We can hide away. Borders of everything that I have ever seen. They're blurring together. They're tilting a ladder toward the past. Where the bad luck and the bad dreams can last. When you put them all behind you, I hope this song will remind you of a certain place and a certain time and a certain frame of your mind when your heart was made of second chances. Oh, but don't confuse a memory of who you were with what you be. You will get out on your own. You will forget the numbers you dial you home. Oh, let's be anonymous. Oh, we can hide away from the words, from the world. Let's go underground. Don't make a move, don't make a sound. We can hide away. No one needs to know.
Yeah, it's it. Fort Francis in studio here on Michigan Avenue. It's a great show.
Hey, we got a couple of window watchers.
You got some window watchers. You know? You got it. You did it. Aaron Kaiser and Dave McMillan are part of the indie band Fort Francis. They're going to be playing at City Winery on the 21st of April. It's an album release party for their new album, Allo. Dave, Aaron, great to see you guys. Thanks for coming on. You got to come back when you come off your summer tour.
Man, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us, man.
All right, that's going to do it for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez up next. Rob Martier is going to have all your sports updates.
Wow.
Big end to the NCAA championship. The Cubs steamrolling. What's happening with the Sox? I didn't miss that one. I got the Cubs game on here.
Let's see. The White Sox, they're leading 4-3.
All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. Maybe I was all wrong about this opening night, opening day stuff.
You know what? The nice thing about the NCAA final being on TBS tonight and not CBS is that I didn't have to put up with Jim Nance's schmaltzy hyperbole at the end.
Tearing down or cutting down.
One shining moment.
Cutting the nets.
Yikes.
Like you cut the nets on life.
Of course, every player will want a strand of that net to put in a frame. Look at the faces.
All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Hello, friends. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's true. It's, I could see Nance doing that, right? He's so mad. Right now, he's so mad. He's like, "That was. This is my moment."
I had so many good lines.
Have a great night, Rob.
You too.